Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Yeah.
It's fun to stay at the YMCA.
Yeah.
All right, we did it.
Fireworks.
Wow. We should have done Katy Perry's fireworks. That's what we should have done.
Because baby, you're a...
Fireworks.
Fireworks? Why is it plural
that's
all of a sudden?
It, baby, there's four of us.
Baby, you're a fireworks.
Baby, you are fireworks.
Oh, then you are fireworks. Okay.
That's what we're changing it to.
Oh, boy.
The Weird Al version.
Welcome, everyone, to an episode of The Command Zone. This is episode 99. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And we are very close to episode 100. How exciting.
Super exciting. And speaking of episode 100...
We're live streaming it.
We are live streaming it. So, this is the episode where we're supposed to announce the time.
And the deets.
Yep. So, March 12th is when the live stream is going to take place. And we've decided on a time.
12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, so that's the West Coast. If you guys do not know what that is in your time zone, you can go to Google and type in 12 PST and then type in whatever your time zone is, and Google will just figure it out.
I'll tell you right now, Eastern Time, it's going to be 3 p.m.
3 p.m., that's right. In
Central Time, it'll be 2 p.m.
2. Yep.
2 p.m., yeah. And if you're in London, it's going to be 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
Look at that. And Mountain, it's 1 p.m.
No one lives in Mountain.
No, I love Mountain. Basic Mountain, that's my jam.
So all you goats listening to this.
So it's going to be on Twitch.
Yes, it's going to be on twitch.tv/RocketJump. It's going to be on Rocket Jump's channel. So if you guys want to check it out, it's going to be very simple. Just go to twitch.tv/RocketJump. And we'll have the links in the description box below. We will be tweeting it out and posting it wherever we can at all times.
Right. It's going to go for about 2 hours. So if you're anytime from noon to about 2 p.m., stop by. We're going to be giving away a bunch of stuff.
Yep.
We're going to be hanging out, answering questions, having a good old time. So if any part of that you can make, you should make.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun celebration. So again, March 12th, 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Hopefully our two guests tonight can make it.
Well, I'm going to take time off from work to do it.
Oh, right. On Saturday?
You work on Saturdays?
Oh, I didn't realize 12th was a Saturday.
March 12th is
and
a
yes,
Saturday.
It is a Saturday.
If I worked on Saturday, I would take the time
off. Oh, very nice, very nice.
Would you actually take the day off of work, or would you just stop working for a little bit and like still get paid but go on to our Twitch channel?
Oh, I would probably take the day off because I would need to recover from it.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, from all the prizes he won, clearly.
Absolutely.
So we have two special guests on tonight. We have Phil DeLuca at KetJack from Commanderin or the Commanderin podcast.
Howdy.
Howdy. Ooh, nice. I like howdy and how's it. It's a strong
Boy,
combo.
Boy, howdy.
Howdy.
How's it? Howdy.
Thanks for having me on.
Is that the Montana accent?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're back to Montana.
Montana. Man, we're getting close to those mountain goats. And we have Andy Hull, a.k.a. at Andy Hullbone, part of the Commander's Brew podcast.
Oh, hey, what's going on? Hello. I don't know what to do now. I'm just talking to Phil Space.
It started with an H, so you're good.
Okay, good.
Hello. Andy's in town for a couple more weeks until March 8th.
That's right.
Phil lives in L.A.
Lives.
And we decided to have the what Josh has deemed the Commander Summit.
Mm-hmm. It's the Commander Summit.
Yeah. We're making changes tonight, boys.
We're talking about changes, maybe.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. None will be made.
Nope.
We're going to impotently talk about what we would do if we were in charge of things, but we're not.
When I'm president.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, we first should say, if you listen to our podcast and for some reason you don't listen to these other two podcasts, so Commanderin or Commander's Brew, I don't understand why. Because
yeah.
You clearly like Commander content. The merrier. Yeah, these guys have been friends of ours, and I'm fans of both their shows. So definitely go check out Commanderin. Where can we find that, Phil?
You can find that at CommanderinMTG.com or at CommanderinMTG on Twitter.
Uh-huh. And that's Commanderin without a G at the end. So Commanderin.
Like
that's
the
right.
Montana.
Although yes. A listener did register Commandering MTG and gave it to us after.
What?
Oh, wow. After
that's so nice.
It. Holy moly.
So if you type in either one of those things,
yeah.
You're good?
Yeah. Rob Gleason. Nice. Thank you, Rob.
Rob, dude, you're a smart man.
What a baller.
And then, Andy, where can we find the Commander's Brew?
Well, you can find us on Twitter at Commander's Brew. And actually, we just registered our website, so you can find us at commandersbrew.com.
Woohoo!
I think.
Who will be the fan to register commanderbrew.com?
Or the Commander's Brew.
Or the Commander's Brew.
Graciously give it to us.
Mr. Gleason, it's on you.
I'm going to register Commanderin Brew.
That's right.
And you both have sort of your own take to the Commander podcast format. Yeah. Andy, you want to talk about yours a little bit?
Sure, yeah. Our show is based all around brewing Commander decks. And myself and my co-host, Sean Tabaris, we will brew two decks based around the same theme. So, for example, the one we just recorded today before I got here was called Thieving Commanders.
Oh, wait,
so it's all
I love
Commanders that.
That
steal stuff, right? Yeah. I did Rubinia Soulsinger, and he did Yasova Dragon.
Yasova.
Nice. So that was a fun one to do. And we also do it on budget all the time. So it's always all the cards in the deck under $50 total, including the commander usually. And yeah, we do a lot of fun themes. We do some Vorthos type stuff. We try and get competitive with it even a little bit. It's good. Yeah, you'll find a lot of a good range of decks, I think.
I love budget brews.
Yeah, we get asked all the time about budget brews and what are some budget options, and we always are like, go ask those Commander's Brews guys because they know a lot better than we do. Phil, do you want to talk about Commander in a little bit?
Sure. We like to talk about theme decks and other topics that we don't always hear covered elsewhere. Like, we've got a series right now where we're doing big mana series. So those are commanders that cheat cards into play and cost, basically reduce the mana cost. Mizzix, Melek, Riku of Two Reflections. And we've also just started a big token series. So again, commanders that kind of focus on tokens. We're about to do a Selesnya version of that with Rhys and a couple of others like that. So we cover topics. We're also very sarcastic. And even though we're family friendly, we still do occasionally have to bleep words. Actually, we just recorded with Andy a couple of days ago, and Andy contributed a boop to our library of boops.
Oh, that's amazing.
Nice.
I'm so happy.
Nice. Yeah. You're immortalized.
Boop? Yeah. I gave them a boop.
Next time I'm on Phil's show, I'm just going to cuss as much as possible so that I can hopefully get one of your boops.
I was going to say, you do like 20 of them until you get to mine, and then it'll be, then I'll have my boop in there.
That's quite a library.
I'm glad that it's a boop and not a beep.
Yeah, no, it's a boop.
I did this with co-hosts Sean Watson and Nate Burgess. They're people, I met Sean online about a year and a half ago, and Nate I've known for 20 years. He's an excellent Magic player.
20 years?
Yeah. And so even though
I haven't
been
alive that long. I have.
Yeah, right. Barely.
Josh is like, I'm 6 times
you both have a host named Sean.
Yeah, we do. And it's spelled the correct way also, S-E-A-N, if you ask them.
I was going to say there's a correct and an incorrect way.
Well, they'll tell you that's the correct way.
I think both ways are correct.
What's crazy is they'll tell you by alternating words because they're part of the same hive mind.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's how that works.
So they've achieved the singularity.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty sweet.
Sean's around the world has. They're really in touch with Connery also. It's really... they got some great stories.
All right, I suppose that Sean spells it correctly as well.
I am the last one.
Yeah, exactly.
You're about now, dog.
We were just talking about that the other day.
I played a whole game with Patrick Scarborough from Riot, and we both spoke as Sean Connery the entire time. It was a draft. I attack you. I block with my tutu.
Such your a classic tutu. Voice. That sounds great with Sean Connery.
I attack with my tutu.
My tutu.
all right, let's
How
move on.
How many cards do you have in your hand?
It's almost as good as our Scottish accent. It's not quite.
Did you do it
against
other players?
It's supposed to be Scottish. What do you mean? I
don't even know what it is. But it's not.
He's Scottish.
Yeah, but it's not Scottish. We know what Scottish. Scottish sounds like this. Mother of runes.
Mother of runes.
Yeah, classic mother of runes.
Mother of runes.
All right, we've gotten off topic already. This happens when there's so many people. So Commander Summit, what we're going to do is we're going to tackle some interesting issues of the day with our esteemed Commander podcast community content creator guests. It's going to be roundtable discussion style. So
nice.
I don't know. Let's just jump in here.
Mm-hmm. Let's jump in.
Okay, so our first section is called Looking Back.
Uh-oh.
We're going to look back at some of the changes that have occurred recently.
It's very spooky.
We're actually physically going back in time
now. Is there
going
to be a ghost?
No, I have to do this. I have to do this the whole time, actually.
Can Terry just loop that?
Maybe. Wait, Terry, just take this.
Get a clean one.
Wait, let me. Oh, God. The pressure.
Lost his tone. Terry, don't loop that.
Don't.
Okay, I would just have to do it the whole time. Okay, I have this. We are in the past.
Okay, we got there. Sweet.
Actually, no, we need to be in the way back machine because we have to look back. So
we're looking back at some of the rule changes that have occurred recently. Let's start with the tuck rule change.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it's been a while. I don't know. Andy, you want to take the floor?
Sure. The tuck rule, I originally was dead set against it, the change. I thought I loved the tuck. I liked that you had to kind of build with getting your commander tucked in mind. I thought that kind of was a skill in deck building. But since then, the one argument that made me change my mind, and it really was just this one, is that why should tuck be more powerful than exile?
Hmm. I have an answer. I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, and I like thinking about that because exile is supposed to be removed from the game.
Well, it was.
It was, right. That was like originally the intent behind it. And you know, things have changed with the processors now, but once you exile something, it's supposed to be gone. So why is it? So you tell me, why should it be more powerful than exile?
It's not that it's more powerful, it's just that it's different. Because why should unsummon be different than exile? And why should destroy be different? It's more powerful in for certain contexts.
Yeah.
Yeah, for that one card.
That's what I mean. Like, why for that one card should
there's be there's nothing powerful in Magic that says exile's the most powerful way to get rid of a creature. There's just...
That's true. That's
find
true.
Me
that's
where Wizards of the Coast has written that phrase,
right.
And I would agree with you, but they haven't. They created exile as a type of removal that has to be dealt with in a different way, but so does destroy, so does unsummon, and so does tuck. So, to me, I've never heard anybody come out and say that exile's supposed to be more powerful than all the rest.
I think it is, though, don't you think? Remove from the game is more powerful than tuck into your library?
I think remove from the game is more powerful than... Well, the problem with it in regards to commander is that when you exile the commander, it just went to the command zone.
Exactly,
so it actually was less powerful than tuck at that point.
But
that's what I mean. So I think their intent with the rule of the put it back in your command zone rule was to be like, you can never get rid of this. And then there was a loophole that they left over that they were like, oh... Okay, fine. And then they're like, you know what? We're going to fix it.
I mean, that is hard to argue with because they did fix it. And so they did sort of make that statement.
Yeah.
I just don't agree with the statement that you're making with the original part, which is like, exile is not supposed to be more powerful than anything else.
Sure.
It's just supposed to be a different way. Because unsummon sometimes is way more powerful than destroying.
True.
But you could say, I think most people would probably say, destroying is more powerful than unsummoning, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But there's a lot of times where it's not.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, definitely.
In other forms of Magic, exile is the most powerful form of removal, right? Because there's no way for you to get it back. There's a couple of ways, but there's really no way for you to get the creature or target, whatever it is, back.
It's very specific how you have to get it back, and it doesn't happen much in constructed formats.
Right. Because you don't even sideboard for that. You just put another copy of the card in your deck. In our format, though, exile is almost no penalty, right? It just goes away for a couple of turns until you can build up the mana, and that's in the worst case. I miss Tuck, frankly.
I kind of miss Tuck.
Yeah.
Although the number of times I've been Tucked before the Tuck rule was like 4, 5. The number of times I've been Tucked post is 0, and I haven't been like, oh boy, being Tucked right now would really suck. Like, it just hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Have there been times, because there have for me, where I have a card that would Tuck something, though, and I'm like, okay, this kind of is very bad now.
Well, Chaos Warp's still really good no matter what.
Chaos Warp is because of the array of things that it hits, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like Hinder just costs more than a counterspell, so it's just like one more mana.
And Oblation. Oblation is 2 more mana.
Oblation's almost unplayable now.
Right. Yeah, Condemn, Oblation, all the cards that actually put cards into the library.
Terminus.
I mean, at the same time, though, I just don't play it anymore. Terminus is still good.
I think Terminus is still good. Terminus is. Especially like playing, say, Marchesa or...
Like a Caridor or something like that.
It's not that they're not playable, but there's definitely been times where I've been holding Terminus and I'd be like, well, in the old days this would be like amazing, and now it's like, it's okay, it's like slightly better than Wrath of God.
From the like kind of lower powered standpoint, I never really felt great, and I know you know it's not about feel bads or feel goods, although the rules committee might say so, but I never really felt good tucking someone's commander, to be quite honest with you. I always
felt like...
What
does that have to do with the... I'm just talking about
me personally. So I never ran a lot of tuck because I didn't really like it. It's not that it was unfair. I don't know. I just didn't really enjoy doing it. You know, I'm like, man, I could tuck, you know, Sean's whatever thing, his commander that his whole deck is running around, and then he just won't be able to play anymore.
Yeah.
And he'll just sit here for an hour and like hope to draw his commander.
See,
which I know the counter argument to that is to like, well, you know, you run a few tutors and you have your ways to get around it, hopefully, right? But it still, for me, never felt great. And I'm not saying that's an argument to get to that they should have gotten rid of it. I'm just saying, me personally, I never enjoyed it.
Yeah, I didn't mind tucking somebody else's general because I usually reserved it for something really bad like Purphoros, right?
Okay, yeah.
And the way I look at it is Tuck allowed us to put more cards in because we're no longer running as many tutors to recover those Tuck generals. But at the same time, now there's almost no incentive not to run something really degenerate. And if you go out into the wild and you're kind of just pubbing, as we call it online, mm-hmm. right? There's no reason not to run a Purphoros deck or, you know,
Narset.
A Narset deck or now
she wasn't getting
even
tucked
Karloff,
anyway,
right? And right, she wasn't getting tucked unless it was Terminus. But still, there are ways to get rid of those commanders in a Tuck universe, but now you cannot get rid of them. And so you have to deal with it somehow. Yeah. And granted, you know, maybe that helps us become better deck builders as well. I think it's allowed those monofocus decks to become more prevalent.
Well, okay, let's do this because I think it'll be interesting as we continue to talk about other subjects. Let's say on a scale of 1 to 10,
mm-hmm.
so we can each sort of come down mm-hmm. on like how strongly we feel about it. 10 being like, I really think it's awesome and I'm glad, and 1 being like, it's horrible, the worst thing ever.
Mm.
Where do you come down on the Tuck rule, Andy?
Pretty in the middle, actually. I'd probably be like a 5 or a 6.
So you slightly think it's good.
I
but
slightly
not
think it. Like I think it's fine. It's good.
How about you, Phil?
I'm about a 4 or 5, so almost exactly the opposite.
You're
I think
the inverse. You slightly think it's bad.
Right, I'm definitely closer to a 4, maybe even a 3, just because I have played against quite a few degenerate decks that had there were just limited ways to punish them for what they were doing.
Mm. Yeah, I'm at a 2.5 or a
yeah,
and
you
2
guys,
or a 3.
You guys play in a more powered up meta than I do for sure.
Yeah, and I think
and
that...
my number would change in a group where, like, oh, gosh, they played this, and if no one does anything, well, you're 80% to lose. Right. And, like, it's... For me, it's, like, it's really brutal. Let's say the Narset player is to your left, and they go first, and you're just the fourth player around the table. There's a good chance you'll never see a turn, and everyone else is going to see more turns than you, and it's just...
Right,
kind of...
you might see your sixth turn, but not your seventh.
No.
Yeah. Everybody else may get their seventh. Yeah. And it's kind of a big deal when you think about it. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear if people think it is tied to power level, because to me it feels like the Tuck cards themselves, the cards that do the tucking, are not expensive cards, and so that should play into the hands of the less powered or more budget decks. It would feel like it would be a way to even the playing field. So it's interesting to me, Andy, that you feel from sort of a lower power perspective that tucking is bad, because I would think the inverse is true. And I'm not saying, I mean, that's just counterintuitive to me. Doesn't mean it's not right.
It's not so much that I thought it was bad. I never thought it was bad. I was the only person in our playgroup that was like, man, they shouldn't get rid of Tuck, like, it's wicked. You know, I was actually for keeping it around, and then the only thing that made me say, oh, okay, fine, it makes sense, is all the stuff that I just mentioned.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's why I was like begrudgingly like, all right, fine.
Yeah, there's a strong argument.
Just a lot of people were like, I thought that's how it worked anyways. You know, like a lot of people didn't even know that.
For me, it's still like, look, if you want to talk to your playgroup and decide what rules you guys want to like adopt and don't, then just do it for Tuck. If it's something that is like, look, if we don't have Tuck, then these players are just winning all the time with these decks, then like, okay, well, sure, go for Tuck.
You know, and people say that a lot about our format, and this is here. There's a side discussion we can get into a little bit, which is this idea of like, here's the rule, but it's not that big of a deal because you can always make a house rule. The problem is when there is an actual rule, that becomes the default.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so if you've got 5 people or 6 people in your playgroup, and you need large playgroups to even play EDH, right?
Yeah.
So you only need one person
exactly
in favor of the default rule, and then it's very hard to get off of it because they have such a large amount of leverage behind them because, hey, the rules committee says this is the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 4 people don't want it, but one person does. It's very easy for that to be a stalemate.
Yeah.
Whereas in a normal situation, it would be like, okay, it's 4-on-1. We should come to some sort of agreement here. But no, I'm with the rules committee, and that's got a whole lot of weight behind it. And so I think the house rules idea is a good idea on paper, but it doesn't actually work that great.
Yeah, the other difficulty is that when you do go out with your deck that has a few Tuck spells in there and you play in a normal group, it's like all of a sudden your deck actually is kind of hurting because those spells don't have the same efficacy that they do in your your regular playgroup.
Yeah, I think like the only house rules I've ever seen is actually from Phil and you guys. When you play online, you say like no infinite combos for more than five times or something. Right. And that is literally the only house rule I've ever encountered playing EDH with a bunch of different people.
And we do that in part because we want to play the game of Magic. Right.
Right. And yeah, you want to get into those long games and stuff, and that's fine. I got no problem with that either. But you're right, Josh, like the default rule is what you gotta go like, well, I built this deck based on the actual rules, you know? So it's like, you guys might have this house rule, but is it okay if we play with the regular rules? And everyone kind of has to go, yeah, I guess, right?
I mean, it's hard. If one person wants to go with the default rules, yeah, it's really hard to overcome that.
Exactly, right.
And I love this idea that you can have house rules, and I think people should if they can get their play groups to do it. It's just been my experience that that's actually harder to do than you would think.
Well, I look at it as we can have all the house rules we want at our own tables, and that's great. But the moment you go outside and you start mixing with people you don't normally play with, you have to respect and expect, rather, that they're going to play with the default rules.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. All right, let's move on to our next issue. It was fairly recent. It's the Vancouver Mulligan. So we did away with Partial Paris, and now we're doing the Vancouver Mulligan rule, which is basically one free mulligan, and then after that, you go down to six, you go down to five, you go down to four, and if you have six or less cards in your starting hand, you get to scry one after you've decided to keep or not. What do you guys think about this change? Phil, you want to take it?
Sure. I think it's overall, it's a very good change. It does come at the cost, though, of... three color generals need a lot more support. And so in a way, it smooths out draws. It makes sure that you're not paying as steep a price for mulliganing down. But at the same time now, if you're playing a three color general, you're at a disadvantage compared to a two or even a monocolor general, right? Whereas it kind of evens the playing field. Before, we used to think that monocolor was the bad color combination, right? Or non-combo. Mm-hmm. But now you can go several turns without drawing the color mana you need. So it forces you to put a lot more rocks in. I'm of the same school you guys are in, where you've always been saying at least 10 accelerants, right? And so I've always had 10 mana rocks, but now it feels like I have to rely more on green. I have to rely more on land tutors. And so those fetches I was getting away from, I kind of want more fetches because I have to get that third color.
Yeah, I am a little... I'm still... not 100% on whether or not I like the Vancouver Mulligan. I think the big problem with Partial Paris is that the sculpting of hands in the deck that was very powerful is actually in a big advantage if someone's put a lot of time into developing their deck so that they can just have a ridiculously explosive draw. And this sort of gets rid of that potential. At the same time, it really punishes someone that has built their deck to be more of like a, I'm just new and I want to play fun, big stuff, because all of a sudden it's like, well, make sure you have all of your mana rocks and all of your ramp in there, because otherwise you're just not going to have as much fun, in, just in case you don't get the opening hand that you think you need.
Yeah, it's, you know what this sounds like? This the thing you guys have been saying. It sounds like when you add more colors to your deck, the harder it's going to be to play it. And you need to put the proper things in to be able to play those colors. And guess what? That's Magic, right?
Like, yeah, it's good deck building.
Yeah, it is. And actually, I think that, Jimmy, your point of like newer players just want to play around and play big spells, that's what we play EDH for, right? It's the best. But it also, that's going to teach them to be like, hey, actually, I need a bunch of these things, right? Whereas maybe they got away with it before. Our meta didn't know that when you Partial Paris the first time it was free. We didn't know that.
So you were always at a slight.
So we were kind of always already like we could never drop what was it that they would do? Like people would drop one and draw one.
Right. You could never drop one.
We could never do that. We always had to drop two to draw one if we wanted to do that. So
huge difference.
So and actually I kind of think that's the middle ground between the two of them. And it is kind of better actually. Someone at the pre-release told me that. I was like, what? Like after the rule had changed, we've been playing wrong this whole time. But it actually I think was better. So that being said, I think the Vancouver Mulligan is good for the reasons you're saying. Like I was hearing about people running like 30 lands in their commander decks.
No, that's crazy.
Lands and stuff like that.
We had a lot of people in our playgroup that were playing like 32.
I can't even.
I run
that.
38.
Yeah, 37, like, that's 37 is the lowest I will go for sure. Right, 38, 39 even sometimes. Right?
Yeah, we've always said on the show 10 ramp cards.
Yep.
Plus 37 lands, which means basically half of your deck is lands because. But with Partial Paris, you didn't have to do it because you could draw a hand. It had one land in it. You could keep two good cards, one land, drop the rest, get your other two lands. You're fine. You're off to a good start. You can't do that anymore. If you draw those one land hands, it's horrible. And then if you only have 32 lands in your deck and you have to go down to six, it's bad. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that it's net positive. It's not perfect. In fact, hearing your idea of like partial Paris, but with the you get one less card each time, that's actually, that sounds like better. But compared to what we had, which was full partial Paris, mm-hmm. I think this is better. I think the games play out more how Commander's supposed to play, right? Mm-hmm. Commander's not supposed to be super consistent. It's not supposed to be like, I always have a Signet or a Soul Ring or a Mana Crypt, you know, but it feels like in the old days,
kind of
that was kind of what happened. Yeah. Like, you know, we were noticing a lot of games where around turn six, somebody was pretty close to winning, and that's too fast.
That's pretty quick for Commander.
Yeah, it's too fast. And it's because they would go Signet, you know, into Grim Monolith into Basalt Monolith, and then turn six is about to happen, or turn five,
right?
And they have 14 mana that they can deploy, and it's just because they could sculpt their hand that way. But now those same decks are a little bit more punished because they have less mana, and so they have to keep these sort of sketchy hands, and they get off to slower starts, and I think that's just net positive.
Yeah, I think Sheldon put it best that if you wanted to continue using the partial Paris system and you were with friends you trusted not to sculpt their hands, go ahead and do it, right? Mm. What we ended up, I don't ever recall trying to sculpt my hand to get the cards that I needed.
Right.
I always just did it to make sure that I had a decent mana base, three lands or more, right?
Yeah.
I hear stories about this, and I just, it's hard for me to understand.
Well, it's not sculpting like combo, though. A lot of times it would be like, I mean, I would do this too because I was very lazy about it. I would often just keep my first seven if it looked decent. But sometimes it would be like, well, I got a mana rock and three lands. So whatever those, I just want something that draws me cards. So I'm just going to get rid of whatever the other ones are and hope I get a card draw spell because that'll get me
the rest of the way, right? Yeah.
Even that was, that's a strong play to be able to do. And you can't do that anymore, which I think is good.
Yeah, it is good. That's what I would do for sure. If the mana was there, I would just throw everything else away and be like, well, maybe I'll get a card draw spell, or more mana is fine too, actually.
Yeah.
What sub question here though, real quick. Do you guys, because the rules committee mentioned that like you can kind of do whatever you want, but do you guys keep the seven out of the deck and draw a fresh seven, or do you shuffle it back
in
every time?
It's player's choice.
But what do you guys specifically like to do?
No, I mean, specifically, it's your choice each time you do it.
No, that's what I'm asking you.
What do you do?
Because what are my seven cards? Do I want to maybe...
Oh, right. So you're saying that like if something is in there that we don't you might want.
Yeah, we don't have you do it this A or B every time. It's
no,
like,
neither do I, yeah.
It's like, I'm mulliganing this time, well... I'm mulliganing a hand with a card that's very good, like Rhystic Study or something. I might possibly want to have that in my opening hand.
Right.
So I'll just shuffle the whole thing and do it. But also time. So a lot of times it's like, if I'm the only one doing it and I look around the table and I'm the and you know, Phil's to my right and it's his turn first, then I'll be like, okay, I'll just do it really fast because I'm going to need to be able to play.
Right.
I don't want to hold up the whole game.
Well, at the same time, so in that way, you're saving time. But in the long run, what we need to do in order to ensure we have the mana base we want is we have to put more tutors back in, whether they come in the form of fetch lands or artifact tutors so that you can get those mana rocks that you need, right? And at the same time, for budget brews, it means that Chromatic Lanterns are going to be far more important.
Mm-hmm.
Darksteel Ingots, which are already in the $2 range, I think.
I think they're cheaper than that.
Chromatics are going up.
Chromatics are $10, I believe.
Yeah, well, that's because of the Yowza. Because of the next thing we're going
to
talk about.
Yeah, and then fetch lands as well. If you want to show up at a game store and basically not be slapped around constantly, you're going to need the mana in order to cast your commander. And again, if you're playing a three-color commander, you need those fetches. You need the rocks that produce multiple colors. And I can't recommend enough Felwar Stone, by the way. But
Felwar Stone's a great card. Yeah.
New one.
A side question here is how has this rule, besides, because it's interesting, this is what made me think of it, is that you're talking about, well, I need more fetch lands, I need more of this. How else have you maybe changed your decks since the rule came out to sort of play towards that rule?
I've done what Kessler has done. I've gone through and I've gotten rid of multiple spells that are 8, 9, 10 mana.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, I mean, they're huge and they're fun and they're flashy and they're big impact, but you can only have a couple of those in your deck. You can't really go overboard. And I laid out the curve and was like, well, before my curve, let's start at like 5. So let's just crank that down to 4 and 3. And I think that's made the experience a lot more smooth. I don't die as quickly just because you have more plays in the early game.
And any hand you get, a starting hand that has 2 8 or 9 drops, it's a mulligan because
absolutely.
Just like it's you have 2 less cards. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
But even before that, you still mulligan those away.
You would just mulligan those two cards, though.
Yeah, unless that
card was... So you could have more in your deck, because anytime you drew them in your opening hand, you would just mull the big ones away, and hopefully draw lands or smaller spells. Right. And now you just can't afford to even have a hand that starts with three of them.
But tell me, Jimmy, you haven't gotten rid of the Great Aurora.
The Great Aurora, the mainstay in all my decks, because I love games going an extra 30 minutes each.
To your cards.
I did get rid of Insurrection, one of my favorite cards of all time out of one of my decks. Yeah, just because I mean, in our meta, a lot of our decks aren't as creature-heavy and creature-based. It's like Insurrection against Mizzix is kind of do you stone cold nothing, buddy. Yeah.
I've taken it out of almost all my decks. I think that I only have one anymore that even has it.
In Joyra, maybe?
Yeah, because early on in our playgroup and when we started the Command Zone, we used to talk about Insurrection a lot, and we still sort of our go-to card as the, like, you win the game card when we're using it as an example. But as we've gone along, it's just become less and less powerful in our meta, and that's with any powerful card in your meta, right?
Wow.
Is going to be like your meta is going to adapt, and I think ours did to like Insurrection just won't win you the game a lot anymore.
That's crazy. That is not the case where I come from. Up in Canada, we still respect our Insurrections. Let me tell you, you're still getting a ton of creatures with you.
There's so many times you look around, and you're like, I'm going to get a Mizzix and an Ulamog, and that's going to hit somebody for 12. Yay!
Exactly. Yeah. While someone has like a Propaganda and a
Ghostly I can't even hit these two guys because it'll cost me 12 mana to attack them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, 1 out of 10, where you guys sit on the Vancouver Mulligan. Again, 10 is you approve heartily, and 1 is you disagree with all of your might.
I can't even give this one a number because I was doing it right the whole time anyway. So like, it's a straight up 5 for me.
Oh, it's 5 right in the middle.
No, this one's a 9. This one's net good.
Wow, really strong. Yeah, I give it an 8.
Yeah, I'm about 8 as well, mostly because I think it is net good as well, because if you think about it, there is no card in the history of Magic the Gathering that is as powerful as a Partial Paris. Like, that ability by itself is unbeatable.
Yeah.
So, I'll give it an 8.
I look at it as... Hello, out of sequence. I look at it as I used to play a game called BattleTech board game stuff, and I would prepare the pieces I would play because I didn't know the terrain. We would always select the terrain second. I look at this as a change that's analogous to that. You don't know what you're going to draw, and so your deck better be able to handle it.
Mm-hmm. Your deck better be built better.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah. Right.
In reality, be built better. In reality, my rating is more like an 8.
That's like 4 okay, B's. Nice.
Yeah, 7-5. Yeah. Yeah, join the 8 club over here.
I like
8
and up. I think it's a really good.
Ages 8 and up, handy hole. The other one last thing about the Vancouver Mulligan, and this has yet to be decided, because we did talk about you're going to need more fetch lands and stuff in your deck to smooth out a mana base for a 5 color, 3 color general. I am interested to know if that's going to make the game harder for players that just are building on a budget to build. Like, for instance, could you do a Commander's Brew $50 and under with a 5-color deck? Do you think that'd be possible with a reliable mana base?
I'm sure you can with Guildgates.
Well, you got Guildgates.
You know what? Honestly, it's not super reliable because...
Don't play Guildgates.
Because it's not even the fetches, because there's the slow fetches.
You got like bad...
The slow fetches are
that.
Great. Like, for budget brewers, they're awesome. But it's the what can you get with them?
You're not going to have the Havlands or a basic land.
Maybe you get the battle or the Havlands. Sorry, I can't say battle lands on here, can I?
No, you cannot. You'll get immediately kicked off the show.
Don't say tango.
Yeah, no. Oh no, I never said tango. Oh,
unless you're about to ask
Who
one of us to
tango?
Dance.
That no one the said worst. Tango.
There is a weird contingency of people that are really in support of
dancers,
tango.
Mostly.
It comes up in Twitch chat all the time.
I guarantee none of them dance.
No, not even.
Why are they so like excited about tango?
How is that not on the list of things to talk about? What are we calling these lands?
Whenever I come to a new table, I ask what they call them because I don't want to be ostracized.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That's a good call.
Havlands.
I want to rewind here. I need to... Phil, you said...
We're going back in time, right?
No, I'm just rewinding. It's not back in time. Phil, you said don't play Guildgates.
Oh, yeah.
You're like super anti-Guildgate because I remember playing a Guildgate and you like gave me the Josh, you're playing a Guildgate.
And it wasn't
that
even
was
double
my Phil voice, Josh.
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 You play
Josh.
A Guild Josh.
Don't you play a Guild Gate?
That's not even close.
Okay. Yeah. Josh, pretty close. Yours was more like Batman.
Yeah.
You're Batman?
I'm the
Don't play a Guild Gate.
Dang.
Don't play a Guild Gate.
I don't want to go in a... Like, you guys have... Dang, the bass. That voice.
Listen,
everyone's voice.
I have dual lands. But I also play Guildgates in a lot of my decks. I think Guildgates are fine.
I love Guildgates.
Don't let anybody tell you not to play Guildgates.
No, no, no.
You know why Guildgates are good? What's it called? What's the
if you control 10 or more gates cards?
Maze's
no.
End?
No, not Maze's End. No.
Well, yeah, that's a reason.
Although I did include Maze's End in a deck I built in a Tazri deck as like an alternate win condition.
Just in case the game goes so 100
fun.
Turns.
It was so fun.
Dude, not to mention, by the way,
once
Maze's...
people saw you doing that, it was like, oh, no, he's going for Maze's End. Does anyone have any land destruction?
Let's not forget Maze's End, by the way. It adds colorless mana to your mana pools. So if you guys need more mana fixtures for colorless.
But Gil, what's the green card that gets fetches a gate?
It's a
creature.
Yeah, 0/1. It's a little wall or something. Anyways, hey man,
gatekeeper.
I'll toss that in there when you need if you got a 5-color deck.
I'll play lifelands. I play refuge lands. I'll play guild gates. Don't let anybody tell you that stuff's not okay.
All of those lands except for the guild gates and the new uncommons from
Gatekeeper Vine.
Gatekeeper Vine.
Gatekeeper Vine.
Gatekeeper Vine.
I'm not gonna play that card.
No, don't play that card either.
I'll draft that card like crazy, though.
Because it would find no targets.
Only if I have gates.
Actually, it finds a basic land, doesn't it?
If you're running 10 gates, let me tell you something.
You can do a basic or
that'll
a gate.
Get you the one you need.
Yeah, exactly.
And the reason is, it doesn't really provide a significant benefit if you've built your deck properly over a basic land. And those basic lands come in untapped.
Wait, hold on.
I recognize the flexibility, but
does,
the speed.
There is a benefit.
That's not true.
But if you've built your deck correctly with green cards...
Oh, I see.
Then
you
can
mean.
Go.
Oh, this
in
is
and
their joke about how Phil likes green and the other guys don't like green.
You're a green player too.
I know. I love green, but I also like.
I have a Mardu deck though. That can't do that.
Well,
he's saying you have not built that correctly. There you go.
All right. Well,
I didn't even know how to say that. Great.
Did we finish great up with our numbers for the mulligan?
Yes, we did. Anyone from a 5 to an 8?
I changed to an 8 because that was my
speed is more important than the flexibility.
All right, let's move on to our next topic. We're still looking back.
Broad statement that
that is almost.
We're never
going to
move on. Okay, we're going to move on. We're going to move on.
The abolishment of rule number 4.
Get out of here.
Number four.
Who does number 4? Wait, that's who
does number 4? There is no number 4.
That didn't work.
Number 3. No. Okay, so the rule number 4, if you guys did not know, was a rule that was abolished, which said that you cannot generate mana outside of the color identity of your commander. It will become colorless instead. So if you had a Azorius commander, a white-blue commander, and you tapped a City of Brass for red, you couldn't. It would just become colorless mana instead. But now you can. So basically, abolishment of rule number 4 means we are just matching the rules of regular Magic the Gathering.
They did it really to get rid of this loophole that would be able to cause you to create colorless mana a lot easier than you should be able to. Because the rule actually stated if you added a color outside your general's color identity to your mana pool, it would turn into colorless mana or diamond mana. So it seemed like a preemptive strike against that loophole. This is what we're talking about with Chromatic Lantern, which is suddenly... become a lot more powerful because if you have Chromatic Lantern, then all of your mana can actually tap for any color mana, and you can actually keep that mana in your mana pool. So if you're playing like Send Triplets or a commander or a card that wants you to generate mana outside your color identity, it's just used to be worthless, and now it's worth something sometimes.
I felt like they were kind of like strong-armed into this. They couldn't not change this rule. The way colorless mana works is it's supposed to be something that you build into your deck as opposed to just fall into by having 5-color lands in a 3-color deck.
Wait, did colorless mana become more important recently?
Well, mostly just because of the Eldrazi, right? The Eldrazi
somehow.
But were they? What are we talking about here? 10 cards? What? We've got a format that's got 20,000 cards in it.
Oh, yes.
10 cards come out. 15, maybe. I didn't count, but it's not very many. It's less than 20. Come out, and we changed the rule in our format for basically like 10 or 15 cards. And how many of those? I think probably only Eldrazi Displacer is so powerful.
Endbringer.
Endbringer's good.
But the point of the colorless mana is to run lands and like artifact sources that create colorless mana, not so that you could run whatever, Felowar Stones and... Chromatic Lanterns and produce it that way. Like, I think that's why, right? Like, a thing that produces any color of mana shouldn't also then produce colorless mana, I guess. That's the change they wanted, I think.
I think there was a better way to word this rule, and the wording could have been... And I understand why they did it, and I'll get into that in a second, but the wording could have easily been, if you generate mana outside... Or no, sorry. The wording could have easily been, you cannot generate mana outside your...
Right.
Outside your general's color identity. Mm-hmm. So just like if I try to add red mana and I have an Azorius commander, I just don't get it. I get nothing.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder. Yeah. Wow.
It would turn off some things like maybe Exotic Orchard or Felwar Stone sometimes. Not most of the time, but sometimes. Mm-hmm. But that's fine, I think.
I think that's fine, too, actually.
Yeah. Although, the side effect of making Sen triplets and a few other things more powerful maybe is net positive maybe also. Maybe exactly. It's fine.
Thieving Commanders.
I can finally build a Sen triplets deck, which makes me excited.
Yeah, you and everybody else.
And, I mean, the argument that...
Yeah, that's why she spiked.
I'll represent Sean, my co-host's argument on this, is that he really doesn't like this. He thinks stick to your commander's colors and that's it. Like, you shouldn't be able to be in blue, white, or whatever, steal something, and then activate its red ability. He just really doesn't think that should be able to be done. And I see that. I agree with that. That's that part of the rule change I don't like, but then the part where it's like, well, we're just bringing it into line with the rest of the rules is something I do like. So
that's actually, I think, the best point in favor of
it.
And it's very strong, maybe to the point where it doesn't matter what the other points are, is that now when you come to play Commander from another Magic format, it's there. This is the same.
Yeah.
And so is the Mulligan. And so it's just a lot easier to sort of break that barrier from like Modern to Commander or just regular and whatever
just
format.
Anything, right? Yeah. Just drafting or whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
1 to 10?
1 to 10?
10.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Whoa. Jimmy, loving this rule.
You sure?
I love it.
I love it.
Is that you saying you love
it? I've been swimming in raw sewage. I love it.
So that's a 10
movie,
for you, Josh?
Anyone?
I don't know that movie. What movie is that? Is that Batman?
No, it's the second Naked Gun movie. Come on.
Okay. Well,
everybody knows that.
That's super into Naked Gun, what, 22?
Two and a half or
two
whatever.
And a half or something?
I don't remember how they named it.
No, 33 and a third. It was the third. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay, sorry. 1 to 10, Andy.
Yeah, 1 to 10. I'm going to go with a 7 on this one.
Yeah, I'm about a 7 as well.
I'm with you guys. I'm a 7. I think it's good. I don't think it's perfect.
Yeah.
But I do think it's positive.
Whatever. Yeah. I'm in the 10 club over here.
Because you're building Sen
triplets. The perfect rule change.
It's the perfect rule change, and I have 2 digits in my number. You guys just have 1.
And I love it.
But we add up to 21.
Ooh, very nice.
Yeah.
All right, current events. Let's talk about some stuff that's happening right now. We had some exciting announcements recently. Eternal Masters, and also... Conspiracy Dose.
Oh, wow. Wait a minute. We haven't talked about this on our show yet.
No, we haven't. This is the first chance.
Conspiracy Dose!
I can't believe it.
Conspiracy Dose. I'm so excited. Thank you, everyone that made it at Wizards. Josh and I. Oh,
thank you.
Our second and third episodes of the show are dedicated to Conspiracy. Third and fourth. That's how much we love the draft format. So.
We loved it so much, and I was... Eternal Masters I was excited about, but a large part of me was disappointed.
Very.
Because when I heard about it, the first thing I thought, literal first thought in my head, when I was like, saw the announcement, we're releasing Eternal Masters, my first thought was, oh, that means there won't be a conspiracy this year.
Yep.
But
turns out you can have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah, certainly. Conspiracy to take the throne, which is exciting because it has Marchesa just like front and center of the whole thing, which
is great.
I thought
that was Marchesa. I didn't realize it was her.
She's got really big shoulder things.
Yeah.
Cool. And she's wearing bras.
She's the queen of hearts.
Yeah.
She's a little bit.
Off with her head.
Off with her heads.
Do we know that Take the Throne is absolutely 100%
that is
the title?
Final,
because they
changed
it like 5 times.
Yeah, Mark Rosewater confirmed that is where they're settling on that one.
Yeah, notice what they're doing with the marketing? They're doing that with Conspiracy, but now they're doing almost...
Oh, yeah, the Whatever Chronicle or something?
Yeah, with Innistrad.
Shadows.
They're starting to lead...
they're doing like a newspaper article and stuff or something. So they're getting... what's the word?
Creative.
Creative with their marketing campaigns.
It's nice. I'm glad they are. Anyway, Conspiracy 2 is going to be very exciting. It's got 221 cards. It's going to be a unique draft format for all your multiplayer needs.
I think you guys are probably... I think you guys are probably responsible for like most of the people who've played Conspiracy, I think.
We
like
certainly...
just at Vegas alone.
Yeah, just distributing the packs alone.
Yeah, it's like everything I've heard from other people on podcasts is like, I never really played Conspiracy until I went to that Vegas thing that Jimmy and Josh hosted.
And everybody then says, and it was really
and
fun.
It was awesome, right?
It was awesome. Yeah. Especially when you get to do some grab bags with it.
We've definitely had some listeners lately, at least a couple emails, talking about how we've talked about draft enough that they want to try it. Conspiracy, the first one, is a great way for a commander group to try draft for the first time because it's very similar to drafting an EDH game.
Yeah.
It's not the exact same, but it's similar. I wouldn't do Conspiracy for your very first draft ever, though, because of the cards that sort of screw up the way the draft itself works. Yeah. I would go with a core set. I've seen some boxes of M14 online for like $70 or something, and we've been asked a few times. So that's what I would go to. I would try like M14 because it's cheap, and it's a core set, and core sets are a little bit more simplified. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would do for your first draft. So there, we've had a lot of people asking about it. If you're thinking about trying draft for the first time, you really only need four people. It's better with 6 to 8, but you could do it with four just to get an idea for how drafting itself works. Mm-hmm. And Andy, I know you're a big drafter.
Yeah.
And it's something that people that play Commander don't necessarily do because it's different. They're not necessarily related in the way that like...
Oh, man.
It's in the way that like horse is related to regular basketball or something.
Yeah, right. Good call. We actually got a lot
horses
of
horses can't play basketball, so yeah, I agree.
Not very well, at least.
Yeah. I mean, they can. They can be taught.
No. You can teach a horse anything.
They foul rough.
Oh, yeah. Boy.
But yeah, we actually, our playgroup actually really got into conspiracy, kind of like you guys. Yeah. We actually got a number of drafts in, so it was what a delight it was to have an EDH playgroup playing draft all in the same, like in the same game. It was so great. So grab your conspiracy. And I don't think you really need to ask what we're more excited about here.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was our question.
EDH players, yeah.
That was our my question on the outline is, more excited for Eternal Masters or Conspiracy 2?
Yeah.
Eternal Masters all the way.
You know what I'm stoked about for Conspiracy 2? More voting cards.
Yeah.
I want to build a voting deck,
there's just
right?
Not
and
enough
there's just
yet.
Not enough right now. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, man.
Will of the Council.
Yeah. What a great card.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know there's going to be like a whole swath of new legendaries.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's going
to
be...
A new Marchesa to put my Marchesa deck.
Yeah. What? You could have two Marchesas in the Marchesa deck.
Yeah.
I assume she'll be the same colors. Yeah. Maybe she changed colors. She's got the throne now.
Yeah.
I don't know what color
maybe
the throne is.
That means you get a little white.
I would
in the
be
other
devastated. I would immediately turn my Marchesa deck into a 5-color deck.
What if she's...
done and done.
What if she's a 4-color commander?
No.
They do it in Conspiracy.
Don't even do that. Don't even play
my
that.
My head just
don't
exploded.
Even, oh my gosh, now I'm even more
Sorry,
excited than I was, and I was excited before.
Right.
Yeah, clearly I'm more excited for Conspiracy 2. I just think drafting with friends, and that's the best part, is if you're doing it with your EDH playgroup, going into that first game, and then all of a sudden realizing, oh, I get to use all these abilities and things that I've learned from playing Commander in this draft game.
It's the perfect marriage.
It's perfect.
It really is.
Perfect marriage.
It's so great. So excited. That's probably the single most exciting thing since I came back to Magic.
I think the best
Conspiracy.
Draft I've...
Two. Because I didn't know enough to be excited for Conspiracy,
Conspiracy
1.
Got it. Yeah.
But now I know.
The I think, honestly, the best draft I've ever done was two packs of M15 and one pack of Conspiracy 1.
And one pack of Marlboro Lights.
And we still played 1v1. We didn't do multiplayer, but just those conspiracy cards were just, they added so much flavor. Actually, it might have been two conspiracy decks. At any rate, it was amazing. It was the most fun. And then we actually did do a big multiplayer game, and it was so wicked. So
yeah,
you can mix
it.
And match. We've done grab bag drafts here with Conspiracy and other sets. It's really, really fun.
You're making me want the drafter right now.
Are we going to do Conspiracy and Conspiracy 2 drafts?
Heck yeah, we are.
Of course you are. Yeah.
100% yes.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, this doesn't really segue into our next topic, but it's interesting because we talked about this on our last show, and a lot of people were very passionate about it. So I thought we'd ask you guys about the reserve list. So there's been a lot of talk because of Eternal Masters about the reserve list, and is it good? Is it bad? Should it exist? Should it not? Why is it there? All this stuff. What do you guys you want to weigh in a little bit? I thought we'd give you the chance.
Sure. Yeah. I'm not like an Eternal player. I don't play Modern I'm not a constructed player outside of EDH, period, right?
Mm-hmm.
So from that standpoint, I have like no opinion. But as far as a Commander player who wants things to be cheaper, I think it's better if the reserve list is gone. And I also think that the reserve list is just outdated anyways. I think it was a response to a problem that they had, that they created, and it was a correct and wicked response to it, and everyone seemed happy with it, but I think it's like outlived its usefulness a bit. I think they've learned the lessons to not do that again, and to make it so that, you know, they don't repeat those mistakes. I think now the biggest problem, if they want to get rid of it, and we know what Mark Rosewater like hates it, right? He wants to get rid of it.
He does
hate it. It is a hassle for him as a
designer. I don't know that he's ever come out and said he wants to get rid of it, but he's...
Well, I think he's at least said he doesn't like it.
He said he doesn't like it. There's a difference, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. So, but I think now the biggest problem is just, like, if they were to, how do they do it? Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a lot of, you know, theories put forth how they could or should handle it. And I have no idea about those. I don't know what would actually work. It seems like you can say, oh, we're going to get rid of the reserve list in 4 years. But then, like, it's like, well, people still know it's going to go away. So it's the same thing as if you did it in 2 weeks, I guess.
But. Yeah. There's a guy on Twitter. Of course, we're all on Twitter. But Steve Guillerme, his Twitter handle is at Steve Explosion. He wrote an article on Gathering Magic that explained or kind of laid out a way to do it. And one of the reasons to do it in a staged overtime fashion is the confidence that people would have in Wizards of the Coast.
Good call. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're, what he pointed out is that if Wizards were suddenly to, you know, just say, oh, we're going to reprint cards from the reserve list and then release them into the public, we would lose confidence in Wizards. It looks like a money grab. We would think that Wizards was suddenly uncertain. Its foundation had been shaken, right? And he points out that if we say 5 years from now, we're going to start printing dual lands, we're going to start printing a few reserve list cards every year, we wouldn't lose that confidence in Wizards. The price of the cards wouldn't plummet like it would. And so investors, I hate that term in Magic, in a Magic sense, but investors wouldn't lose all of their money and would still be able to play the game. Or we would still be able to play the game.
Yeah, I think overall that is a good thing and something that I hope happens, because if they start printing reserve list stuff, those people get the people who want it get their hands on it, and maybe it becomes available in other formats. I don't know if that would happen, but if it did, that certainly would push out other cards that would push them into the hands of EDH players. And that would be
I mean, would it? Like, I think
I don't. I don't think.
I think
really,
the reserve list should go too, but we've seen with Tormogoyf's the go-to example, right? It's just still not attainable, really. Yeah. Even though they reprinted it in two sets.
Yeah.
So it's like people are like clamoring for them to reprint these cards. And like my feeling is probably if they did in the way that you're talking about, it would be in a similar fashion, in which case they're still going to be $100. So does it really matter?
Yeah.
But Underground Seas wouldn't be $400 for the white border version. Right?
True.
And I'm talking as a guy, I'm lucky enough, I still wince every time I think about your flood, Josh. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, good times.
But I'm lucky enough, I didn't lose all of my cards in a flood or because my mom threw them out or anything like that. I still have all the dual lands. And so that represents a huge amount of value in my Magic collection. And I want dual lands reprinted.
Yeah.
If only so that you never have to play a Guildgate again.
Wow.
I still would, though, because I'm not paying $100 for them. Like, you know, I just have the ones I have.
I just look at, like, what happened with...
You know, you would go to Frank and Sons and you would buy a case of this, whatever supplement.
Well, I'm
in.
Definitely buying, like, six cases of Eternal Masters. Let's be real.
Look at what happened with Vintage Masters online, though. Like, it just brought a lot of those cards down to a way more reasonable price. And now...
Well, online's a totally different
online
thing.
Online is very different, but like that effect is still something that was positive.
I mean, I'm not arguing against them doing it. I think they should totally do it. I just am cautioning people to think that would like solve their problems and they would be able to have as many Underground Seas as they want.
Oh, no.
You
no,
can't have as many Tarmogoyfs as you want right now. It would be the same thing, I think.
It just makes it more obtainable for people, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, people are... I heard an interesting idea is where instead of... Because it seems as though... It's not like people are clamoring to get into Legacy or Vintage, right? People are clamoring to get into Modern, if anything, and Standard, but certainly not those older formats. I don't think Wizards cares that much about those older formats. I heard a really interesting idea of because Commander players is kind of the big need for dual lands, we all want them, and we can only play one of each in our deck anyway, of printing legendary lands that are essentially untapped duels, but you can only play one of them in your deck. So for Commander, it doesn't make a difference, and for constructive formats and for people in the collectors, it wouldn't destroy the value of their big bad lands.
So the functional difference there would say it would say on the card you may only play one of these in your deck,
right? Because it is a legendary or
no, it's just a legendary,
it's just
land.
Legendary land. So you could play four, but every time you play another one, it would, you know, you'd have to discard one.
Well, they can't reprint it in a functional sense, right? And I wonder if that would... Well, I know they defined what functional means, and I'm not sure if legendary counts.
Right. I think the ability to only have one in play at any time is pretty close to not. Close.
You'd then have to ban the duels out of EDH, though, right? Because otherwise, I'd still want the duels. It would just be like another command tower, kind of.
Right, but you would do it in a way that's like, no, look, hey, now if you didn't have any duels, now you have access to fetchable duels that do what you want and are essentially the same power level for commander.
That's true. Instead of somebody having five duels, you have zero. They have 10 and you have five. Right. That's better. Yeah, it's true.
I do think they're... I remember something. Maybe it was on Mark Rosewater's blog or something like that. Where they said, like, Wizards does not want to print a card that's better than a basic land. Like they don't want to bring stuff that comes into play and just is two colors anymore. They don't want to do that. There should always be a downside if you want that ability, basically. So that sounds like they... Like
Command
that,
Tower.
That goes against what they want, right?
Command Tower.
Command Tower is not playable in those formats at all.
Right, right. Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, right. Point. So this, like, I like the thought, like, maybe they could, like, maneuver around it and build something just for Commander.
Yeah, they...
That would be cool.
They use strictly better as it should be, you know, in they actually mean strictly better when they say it.
Yes, exactly.
And they don't want to reprint anything that's strictly better than a basic land.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah.
All right.
Interesting.
All right. Another, I like this question a lot. Who do you guys think the most powerful commander is out right now? Out and about, not banned, ready to rock.
No hedging, one.
Yeah, I got one. Easy.
Go.
Yeah. Mizzix.
Karlov.
Karlov, really?
Narset.
Yeah.
Mizzix.
I'll put Mizzix at two.
Yeah, I've played Mizzix enough now.
Yeah.
Yeah, really?
Wow. Also, I think
played a lot of Mizzix, have you?
I've played Mizzix and played against Karlov.
Right.
And
right.
Karlov by turn three can be an 8/8 creature if you do it properly, and then life gets very difficult if you're not playing Karlov.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I feel like Mizzix would just bounce it and then Mizzix. Never let you cast it again.
Yeah.
For me, Narset, because it is one much better than Mizzix in the 1v1 format if you're playing one person. And also is very hard to stop. She's not casting the spells, right? Oh, no, she is casting the spells. But like at the same time, it's like getting four free spells off the top of your deck is on turn four or five or whatever.
Well, and the way the good Narset decks are built are that the spell... is always an extra attack turn phase spell. Or an extra turn. And so it sort of turns into another spell, into another spell, into another spell. And usually good Narset decks are like, if they get one swing,
it's
you're
over.
Probably dead.
Yeah, whereas with Mizzix, you kind of have to build up the experience counters over time. You can always hold up stuff at instant speed, but for instance, I think if Mizzix played Narset and Narset just wanted to end the game, it'd be very hard for Mizzix to stop them because they never get to untap after Narset swings once.
You know, it's funny. This conversation reflects my bias because we don't see a lot of Narset.
Same
because
here.
You have to be morally bankrupt to play Narset.
Yeah. Narset is it built correctly, and you see this. Yeah. We don't have a powerful Narset deck in our playgroup, but at local LGSs, I've seen it often, and the deck is always extremely powerful, and it feels unbeatable. Because of the natural hexproof on Narset, does so much.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it's just so hard to respond to a hexproof creature that naturally has it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because most of your instant speed removal is gone, and then you're sort of left with instant speed board wipe.
Right.
And that's just hard. There's not many.
Or you're like your
hope you counter it.
Arcane Lighthouse.
Like, and Grave Packs and some things can do things about it. But it's if the Narset player is making sure that those specific things don't hit the table, then you're down to like eat a Merciless Executioner. But a lot of times you don't have a chance to deploy that type of thing because it goes Narset, Swiftfoot Boots, attack.
Yep.
Okay. You know? Well.
Interesting.
Yay, magic.
And if they have, then they should have been able to set up the top of their deck before then.
Yeah, they got a Scroll Rack.
Right. Brainstorm,
a Jace the Mind Sculptor. Yeah.
I've actually never played against a Narset.
Oh, my
I've
God.
Only heard these horror stories.
It's a super expensive deck because all the most expensive, well, not the most expensive, but everything that fixes the top of your library is an expensive card.
Yeah,
Jace the Mind Sculptor, Scroll Racks.
We have a couple of guys in our meta who are like who
Divining
are running,
Top Siobhan.
Yeah, that's right. We have a couple of guys in our meta who are running the, like that kind of stuff. No, like who are running expensive
They got Jaleva
decks.
Then instead of Narset or something.
Yeah,
right?
And
that deck is also very hard to beat as well.
What would we have? That was running that kind of stuff. I can't remember.
Properly constructed
Jaleva.
Jaleva. We've now found the proper pronunciation of that.
Jaleva.
Jaleva?
Jaleva.
It's a real name.
Wait, that's actually how you pronounce it?
And that is actually how you pronounce
Get
it.
Get out of here.
I didn't know that either until like, I pointed it out on Twitter.
I thought you were just joking, doing your Canadian jokes.
Jaleva?
Well, first of all, I know. So, you know what? We cannot get into this right now. We cannot get into this debate right
just
now.
Just the quick version. Go ahead.
It's. I thought it was Jaleva because I have a friend named Yelena. And it's one letter off, but I was wrong. It's Jaleva. So anyway,
it's with a Z, like a Jaleva.
It's a ZH sound.
Dr. Zhivago.
What the heck? Crazy? That's spelled with a ZH, though. Okay.
Anyway,
anyways,
there we go. Let's get back on track here.
All right,
we are not easily distracted.
Okay, so
yeah,
so to the next topic, we're going to be looking ahead. These are some interesting ones. The first question is, how do you feel about the state of the format?
Rock solid. Don't change anything. We're good. Just kidding.
Done. 10.
10. I feel about the state of the format. 10. That's not how you feel, Jimmy. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
100%. 10.
It
sure is.
10 out of 10, baby.
Believe it.
I think right now the format's doing well, but the recent spikes that are largely due to both speculators moving into the market and modern, right? Mm-hmm. And I realize that the Brainstorm Brew guys say that it's not speculators, it's just a supply-demand thing, and I agree with that, right? But it's a supply and demand that's based largely on modern. As modern ranks swell, those prices go up, which means that a lot of cards we care about are going to be very expensive.
So you think the state of format is hurt by the price of cards?
I think it's hurt by the price of cards, yeah.
I think there's a lot of cards that go up because of EDH, though, too. They might go up a bit slower, but they
yeah.
They
well,
certainly,
send triplets.
Yeah, I mean, look at
Chromatic Lantern.
Chromatic Lantern, yeah. I mean and you had plenty of time to buy into Chromatic Lanterns mm-hmm. when they were $2, but...
Especially when I named it the number one artifact in EDH.
That's yeah. what did it.
I did it. That's did it, did it.
That was a good call.
Yeah, I knew they were going to make that rule
I said Solemn Simulacrum is pretty good.
That card is amazing, too.
Solemn's awesome.
I would agree. I think rising card prices makes it harder for a new player to enter the market. At the same time, Wizards seems to be catering every set to Commander in different ways. I think the cons block, one, it helps for story yes. to have legendary creatures and stuff, but it also really helps when they do it in a way that gives you cool commanders. I mean, we got Narset, Anafenza, Zergo, and these are all commanders that our playgroup plays out of a single block.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really exciting. At the same time, though, it's true. Rising card prices does not make it easy for people to jump in, and a lot of the best cards in EDH are modern playable.
Well, especially if we start relying more on fetch lands. Mm-hmm. Fetch lands, then we're competing directly with both modern and legacy players, right?
So, play your guild gates.
I mean, we're always going
damn
to be.
Damn you, Hull.
Hashtag guild gates. Here we go.
We're always going to be. Like, the best cards are very often going to overlap with those right. two formats. They're mm-hmm. not always, but, you know, Snapcaster is still going to always be good in Commander.
Mm-hmm.
It's yeah. not as good as it is in Modern, but it's still very good. You know, there's always going to be those cards. I think people who listen to the show know that I'm sort of a big, not a proponent, but I'm understanding of that aspect of the game,
right.
of the value of cards and mm-hmm. that being part of the allure and the brand of Magic
mm-hmm.
And a big piece of it. And I think bigger than most people realize.
Well, it's an aspirational effect.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think card prices are probably too high. It's just their ability to turn that knob so specifically, I think, is not what people think it is. They can't make every card like $5, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah,
they
yeah.
can make them all cheap or make them more expensive. They don't have that kind of precision. So I understand. And I think we've got two reprint sets coming out this summer.
Yeah.
So hopefully they're aware of it. And if we keep doing this, now we'll have twice as many reprint sets
yeah.
maybe. If this is going forward, we're going to do something like this. That's going to be helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You
totally,
know?
Yeah.
But we've talked about before, just last show, Damnation's a card we've been calling for a reprint, and they've had so many chances in just the last few years to reprint it from both Modern Masters sets to Commander products from the Vault Annihilation. They've
right.
declined to reprint that card. That's just very expensive for no good reason, and there's a lot of cards like that. So I do agree with you on some level that card prices being really high, it's tough. I'm not so much for new players, just for anybody.
But mm-hmm. yeah,
it,
I mean, as the host of a budget podcast, we come across this a lot.
Yeah,
we come across the like building a deck 1 week, and then the next week,
oh,
a
yeah.
card in that deck has shot up and now has made that deck not our budget brew anymore.
You liars.
You guys are awful.
We did the pre-cons, right? And we took the pre-con decks and we added $15 worth of cards to them so mm-hmm. that you get a $50 deck, right?
Right.
We did it with Mizzix and we added the buyback
Reiterate.
Oh, yeah.
And
went up like $20.
The next couple days later, it was like, Sean's like, have you seen how much Reiterate is right now? And it's like, when we did it, it was a $4 card. And then the next, it's like $24. So
it's all because of you guys, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Yeah.
Well, there's proof that EDH can push prices because
of course
all
can.
Of those prices rose yes. because of the Commander product.
And that's totally, totally true, right? And I really think we have a bigger impact on. Not these four people here, although maybe, but the format has a larger impact on the card prices than we might want to admit. And EDH is a very popular format now. Casual is more popular than competitive.
Mm-hmm. By far.
By mm-hmm. far. By not far, even yeah. close, right? So people who are sitting around and playing Magic for the first time might do a little draft or build their own little kind of dinky 60-card deck out of whatever cards they have. But then they're probably going to just start playing Commander because it's like, well, I've got 200 cards and they can all do this. I mean, that's what I did. I didn't even know.
And I don't have four of everything. Exactly. And I don't want to go get four of everything.
So everyone's doing it. Everyone's picking it up. And I don't, I'm not as upset with Modern as, say, oh, I don't know, the Commander and podcast is.
We're a little saltier.
With Modern?
We're a little salty about it. Yeah. Yeah. Well, little salty.
You're like
about
upset
modern.
With Modern
Let's
the format.
Say they have a saying.
With Modern the format in particular because of the behavior it drives in terms of spiking up the price.
Yeah,
of cards.
Just for pure for price reasons. But like Jimmy said, actually the last couple sets they've put out have been fantastic for Commander.
Yep.
And you might like, and I got caught up with lamenting like, oh man, like, you know, all these cards are expensive now because of Modern. And then but then look at Khans of Tarkir, it had so many great cards in it.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty pleased with it.
I think looking back a few years from now, we're all going to say that Khans of Tarkir is one of the best sets Wizards has ever released.
For sure. Yeah. I agree.
I'm saying that right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm willing to say that right now.
I'm willing to say it right now as well.
It was fantastic.
I put my money where my mouth is. I bought like 8 cases of it.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say about the state of the format is I think EDH is growing very rapidly. Going to Grand Prix, I was at GP Oakland and seeing so many people play Commander and have different decks and cards that I'd never seen.
Right.
Really exciting, really cool. Also notably, there is, I think EDH specifically has one of the most diverse fan bases, both in terms of gender and race, which is great because it is more casual than your regular spiky format. And it is very, very, very comforting and very nice to see that there are lots of people able to enjoy this, both like young to old, female to male. Just basically anything under the sun / rainbow, you know what I mean? It's great.
Yeah, we've been doing this podcast for what, almost 2 years now?
Yep.
It feels like the leap that EDH has taken just in that amount of time is really big. Like when we started, I feel like it was pretty niche and, you know, people played it and knew about it, but not like now. It feels like it's just all over the place, and Wizards talks about it a lot more than they used to, and it gets mentioned
in
articles.
Cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And that's only been a couple of years that we've been paying attention and looking at it, and that's a big leap in that amount of time. So I feel like the format's in a pretty good place.
Yeah.
And obviously the growth is showing that.
Not to mention when we started, there are maybe a few podcasts, and now there's close to like 15 to 20 probably.
Oh, yeah, I mean, get those guys out of here. They're the worst.
That's part of the evidence for it. And
yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think that just shows just how much people love the format.
Yep.
Hey, I have a question for Andy, though.
Sure.
Are you
playing a Guildgate in your next deck?
Of course, you know I am.
Great, great. Now, do you have stacks
of
Hibernation's End and Reconnaissance? Like, and you're hoping that those
are the ones
up?
I always tell people that I love. Yeah,
like Jason Ault and his seances.
No, I have one Hibernation's End, and I don't even own a Reconnaissance.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Oh.
That's more of a Tiberius card that I just remember that he found. So
got it.
Yeah. Anyways. Hibernation's End's a cool card, but I've been playing in some decks. It's like, it's not as good as I thought it was, but it is still really good.
I'm buying it out, a TCG player right now.
Damn.
All the foils. You won't be able to find any foils now.
$24.
Jimmy's on the foils.
It's got such cute polar bears.
Isn't
on
it cute?
It.
Damn, bears. Speculators.
It's me.
All right. The pirate, Jimmy.
Next question, looking ahead.
I just bought
five. Oh, very nice. What do you guys think the biggest issue facing EDH right now is?
Oh, well, I think it's the price.
Guildgates,
number two.
The price? So it's the same as the...
Yeah, my biggest issue is actually the cost of some cards that we want to play. And not the... granted, you know, Khans just released a whole bunch of cards that we can use. Battle for Zendikar, this block has released a whole bunch of cards that we can use.
Yeah.
I think that the moment you go... Well, as soon as you try to reach back like 5 or 6 years, those prices start to go up way too high. And I'm not a budget brewer, and as you know, you may recall from the trip to Frankenstein's we just took, where I bought a few cards. but I think about how fun it is to play some of these cards, and I don't want somebody to walk up and have to pay, you know, $7 or $8 for a simple, you know, like even I won't name the cards, but because I hate them, but some of those cards are like $10.
He must mean Phyrexian cards.
I was going to say,
Phyrexian cards. Because Guildgates would never be that expensive.
Even the Bill, for those reasons, does not talk about Phyrexians and won't even speak of it. It's kind of like an Ohio State and Michigan fan, how they won't say the names of the opposing schools.
It's just bad juju.
Yeah.
Well, you look at some of those cards and they're $24, right? And I don't think that...
I love the
players. What do you mean those cards?
Yeah, what do you mean those cards? Shieldred would like to have a word with you.
Yeah. And so I see that as the biggest issue right now. Otherwise, I think the Commander cards that come out, you know, the Commander series, I don't agree with the professor necessarily with that. He, you know, he believes that it's ruining Commander because eventually we'll end up with a whole bunch of cards that are just from the Commander series.
Yeah, more cards.
Right, more cards. No. That's kind of the way I look at it. And I think those benefit us. They introduce new players to the format. I just think that the moment those new players want to tune their decks in order to play, you know, for example, a Slivers deck, mm-hmm. right, they suddenly have to spend a few $100 in order to play something that's respectable at a shop.
I don't know if anyone's going to respect a Slivers deck.
No.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I don't think that's the biggest issue facing EDH right now.
It just feels like a Magic issue.
I think it's certainly a Magic issue. Yeah, and let's not kid around. Cards are at their all-time highs in terms of, like, buying into Standard right now could cost you upwards of $800, which is insane. Jace the Mind Sculptor is not as expensive as Jace for the Prodigy. That is
it's also not as good.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be the entry format. That's supposed to be standard, the one that you get into it, a Standard, right?
Right.
Yeah. And it's $800 for the top tier deck. It's insane.
I mean, maybe it is good for EDH that you get one product every single year that is like a perfect Christmas gift / Kwanzaa gift / Hanukkah gift.
/ whatever holiday that you celebrate.
I'll say this. I do like drafting and then trading in those very expensive cards and then buying older, slightly less expensive Commander
that
stuff.
Is nice.
I like that a lot. Mm-hmm. So
yeah. I personally think the biggest issue facing EDH right now is the growing schism, chasm, whatever you want to call it, between Wizards and the Rules Committee. I think at a certain point, it's going to cross a line and it's going to jump the shark with something, and there's going to be a turning of the tides.
So, can you explain what you're seeing?
Josh raised his hand and pointed to the sky when I
sure
said
did.
It. I think the first one was the Tuck rule was what sort of started it off, and the way that Sheldon justified it and how he typed up his justifications for it and sort of using his quote-unquote empirical data from a very locally sourced small player group, I think, was something that immediately gave me huge warning signs mm-hmm. because that is like a central government working, and we are in, you know, it doesn't work in the way that, let's say, the United States works, where each state has their own government and mm-hmm. they can look over things because they can see it immediately in that area. So it was tough to see that. And I think Wizards just has access to more money, time, and ability to hire people
right.
to do the job with more data and make more informed decisions.
Right. So,
snap.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
You know, and I think we've been guilty of this in the past, and I don't want to lay it all at Sheldon's feet. And I feel like the Tuck rule specifically, because he had written an article very recent to that Tuck rule change, talking about the Tuck rule. I mean, sorry, talking about cards that use Tuck.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was even necessarily. I'm reading between the lines. I don't know this stuff for sure, but I didn't get the feeling that he had championed we need to change the Tuck rule. So I don't want to say Sheldon Mennery.
No, no, no.
Right, the rules
as
committee.
A person, but the rules committee. I do agree is an issue, and it to me it's the biggest issue right now. It's just that it's a format that's growing. It's very, very large. A lot of people play it, and yet it's being governed by a pretty small body with not a lot of statistical data. So all the choices that are being made based on I don't even know what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this time they talked about computer models and simulations for some of the reasons that they made rule changes.
But those were spreadsheets.
We don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
That means somebody typed it in a computer? Like, what does that mean? Like,
he specifically said it was basically Gavin, I think, put together a spreadsheet and analyzed how the Mulligan rule would actually affect your first hand draw.
And that's easy because it has to do with, like,
I could do that math right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You don't need to run a bunch of computer simulations with, like, different cards and stuff. It's just, like, how much mana do I have? How many cards total in my deck? There.
Statistical chance of drawing 3, 4, or 5, whatever.
Yeah.
What really kills me about this is Wizards really should have all of this data, right? Because they have an online product
Correct.
That a couple of people might play.
Yep.
And people tend to play Commander on it. Now, my understanding of that community is that it's a little bit warped, but it's have data.
Dual.
They should be able to record which cards are in use and mm-hmm. how many times they're being used and what's being tutored for and be able to identify the problem cards.
Warped or not, it would be based on something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, more than it is now. I feel like if we go down the list of changes that have happened, we talked about the Tuck rule, the Vancouver Mulligan, the abolishment of Rule 4. We recently banned Prophet of Crucifix, which we didn't talk about, and maybe we will in a second. We also had a big shakeup in sort of like they changed from like band is only to commanders to like we don't have that anymore. Now we're just doing band or not band. Metal Worker came off. A lot of stuff happened. I don't know if I agree with all the changes. It doesn't have to do with that. It just has to do with how are those decisions being made.
Yeah. Right.
So like I don't know.
I think Jimmy's got it.
To play like devil's advocate a bit though. So if you want Wizards to handle this, first of all, their online product is not like the best place to do it. Right, there are the Magic.
But that's
Online.
Not where they're doing it. It's where they're gathering some of the data to make the decisions.
Right, and it's not super reliable. I don't think. Right, Magic Online is not a place where Commander players go to play multiplayer games. Generally, I know there are some people who do it, but there's not very many. I couldn't find a multiplayer Commander game for a long time, and we were actively looking to try and just like, oh, I wonder if there's any public, just like free for all games going. Barely any at any time. You really have to schedule them with people. And we don't know enough people that play it. So it's a dual format online, and it's really super warped, and they don't play with the French rules even. So it's just like this free-for-all, one-on-one weird format, right? And that's not really what Commander is. So and I think they could make it that, and they should, but I don't think that's anywhere near their priorities for Magic Online. I don't think they want to turn it into the Commander, like to make it play Commander on there. I mean, like ideally they might want to, but they got to figure out how to not have all their cards bugged and how to make their tournaments work.
I don't think it would have this. Yeah, you know I don't think it would have to do with Commander specifically on MTGO. It would just be using some data points from that to make some sort of, you know, at least have some sort of data that you're gathering. I mean, any data has got to be better than no data.
Right. That's assuming that they have, that the rules committee has no data. They would say they have
They have said they don't have any data. And he has said specifically that it would cost
$2 million.
$2 million. I don't know where that number comes from, but it would cost $2 million to get the data they need to make their decisions based on data. So if anybody wants to give us $2 million, then we'll do it based on data. I mean, that's basically exactly word for word what he said times. Yeah. And there's so many things wrong with that statement. I won't even start with that. So what we know, they don't base it on data. Right. So that's scary. And the other thing, and I've said this before, Wizards is a company. I have leverage against a company as a player.
Right.
Which means a group of players, a large group of players, Commander players as a group, have leverage against WotC to make things happen that we want to happen.
Yeah.
We have our wallet. We've seen that Wizards responds to our wallet. They brought back the Modern PT when they weren't going to do it. They've done a million things over the last couple of years just based on social media pressure.
Yep.
And so we can't exert any sort of influence over the rules committee, but Wizards we can because they're a business and they worry about their bottom line. And so it would be really nice to have some way to affect the way that the format is run, because modern players do. It's not the best, but they have something. Standard players do. It's not the best, but they have something. They can appeal to Wizards of the Coast. We don't have anything.
Is there some sort of hybrid thing where the rules committee, maybe like Wizards opens up, you know, this, you know, mythical data that may or may not exist that
Wizards
the rules committee can then use and
Wizards
look at?
Has
like, would we be happy with that is what I'm saying?
They honestly, if they really wanted to, they could think about hiring some of the people from the rules committee.
Yeah, I don't even think those people are necessarily bad. It's not like, hey, we should get rid of Sheldon and like, just why isn't Sheldon work for Wizards? You know, it could be
he technically has. He's Judge Emeritus. You know, he's
well, as we know, judges don't actually work for Wizards of the Coast, which is weird. but he wouldn't even have to be full-time employee. He could be a consultant. But some way that Wizards is actually the one in charge, so that when I am like, you know, when not just me, but all of us have our pitchforks and our torches out and we're like at the gates being like, hey, we don't think the Tuck rule is good. Somebody might listen to us. And that's just an example.
Yeah.
I think overall, just so we're clear, I know most people like the Tuck rule, even though I don't. And so that's fine. I'm fine with the Tuck rule change. But if we just had a rule that everybody didn't like or the majority of people didn't like and it got changed, like we would have a way to get the majority through. We don't have it.
Yeah, it's also a disconnect for new players. Just like they're smoothing out the mana rule, just like they're smoothing out the mulligans. Now, for a new player to come on, they have to understand that Commander is actually ruled by a rules committee that has nothing directly to do with Wizards of the Coast. And you have to go to a separate website because Wizards of the Coast doesn't even update their Commander rules.
Yep.
Right?
Oh, wow.
They have no incentive to, even though they should. Right. But there, it's tough.
We should say there is cooperation between the rules committee and Wizards. Yes. And Wizards does have a person or a couple people yeah. that are part of the rules committee. But it's not like an official thing. But there does have to be because of Magic Online. They have to change rules yeah. to match. So when the Tuck rule changed, they had to go on Magic Online and change a bunch of coding. So people had to like talk and make sure that that was going to be possible and things like that. So there's communication. It's just not the way that I personally would like it, as far as like Wizards is not like where the buck stops.
Yeah. Well, their cards on Gatherer do not reflect the current ban list of Commander.
Yeah.
Right. Their rules on their website, on the mothership, do not reflect the current rules of Commander, right?
But every year they release Commander product.
Right. Yep.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's a lot of it is meta specific, and it's tough to, I think, no matter what you do, to make blanket rule changes. And I think there's always going to be some people who don't like it, and always mm-hmm. people are like, well, it's fine in my meta, and I'm like, well, no, it's a terrible problem in mine, and you know, it's just going to be this weird format we have where it's like, well, then make a house rule. You know, yeah. and it's like, that's not really the answer. But
we're seeing more of that, too. In the community gets very upset and starts saying, you know, all sorts of rude things. But essentially, don't listen to the rules committee. Do what you want. The rules committee is out of touch. Do what you want.
Right? Yeah. Which is not good for the format either long term, I don't think. And we talked about the house rule thing, so I won't go into it again. Yeah. I did want to, before I forget, let's rewind to the looking back section, and let's talk about the Prophet of Crew Fix ban. Yeah. So we talked about the other stuff, but we didn't talk about this. Prophet of Crew Fix ban.
10. Oh, we're not there yet, are we?
You can.
10.
9.
I have cooled on it. I thought I was in favor of it, and the more I think about it, I'm actually like a 4 now.
Oh, wow.
A 4?
Slightly against.
Yeah, I am slightly against it. And just because the more I thought about it, the less I could think of examples where Prophet of Crew Fix was like so much worse than anything else.
Yeah, I agree
It's
with
bad,
that.
Don't get me wrong, but so is Consecrated Sphinx, and so is Palancron, and is,
totally.
You know.
I mean, those are bad things. For me, it's a 10 because of the same thing you said about Sol Ring. It's like, well, now I get to put another card in there.
Yeah. The thing about the Prophet of the Crew Fix for me, though, it's like you draw extra cards of Consecrated Sphinx, and that demands immediate removal, but you don't get to play those cards immediately. You know, you don't get to empty your hand as you draw the cards and then slowly gain
but
more
Prophet
control
of Crufix,
over the
if you
board.
Have if you play Prophet of Crew Fix and you don't have card draw, then you might play two cards and be done.
Well, I mean, you do.
But that's still amazing. You know, and here's the thing, is like Prophet of
Crufix, it's not better than drawing 7 cards.
But being able to untap and hold anything you want, any card in the history of Magic in your colors in your hand is pretty powerful. You could have counterspell up for the rest of the game.
Yeah, you know, but you could do that with Prophet of Crew Fix too.
No, that's what I'm saying. Prophet of Crew Fix allows
you could do that with Consecrated Sphinx too.
Yeah, but I'm saying Prophet of Crew Fix allows you more than just untapping and being able to play stuff and flash stuff in, is that you actually have, I mean, like, it's just the fact that you get the extra turns. I think that's the big one for extra phases.
I am not debating that it's powerful, because it is insanely powerful. But
I think that's what
our format is about, insanely powerful stuff. And I don't think that it's that much more insanely powerful than so many things that exist. And I'm just sort of against banning. I would take a lot of things off the ban list if I could, and I would definitely go through and take off as many things as I could. And the Sol Ring thing, just to counter that point, is Sol Ring's ubiquitous. It goes in literally every deck. Probably Crufix goes in
every
blue-green
deck. Yeah, exactly.
It's totally different.
That's why I thought it was never going to get banned. I thought there's no way they're going to ban this two-color card, even though
Here's the thing, though. It's like one Prophet of Crufix costs 5 mana, and I think it really does warp the game.
It does.
Here's the thing. Is like, if you don't have the cards in your hand and you play it out, then you're not playing it right.
Right.
You should have card
draw. And the game
you
tends
to
warp around
But if you have
it
to do
things... It becomes about stealing it. It
yeah,
becomes
but
about...
so does Consecrated Sphinx.
Well, then
so does
they
Deadeye
should ban...
Navigator.
They,
so, no,
they
because
ban
you
that
can.
Too. But
Deadeye
that
Navigator
is, that...
requires mana for you to use it and abuse its ability. I think it's the combination. It's just too much. It provides
Prophet of Crew Fix requires cards. How's that different than requiring mana? It's just requiring a different resource.
If you sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it's just that, like, again, it's just the fact that you get the extra turns and are able to do stuff on people's other turns. There's just too much built into one card. Consecrated Sphinx is a flyer, and it can draw you cards, and the drawing cards is very powerful, but it's not like it also allows you to untap your lands or do something else ridiculous.
If you tap out to play Prophet, you're not tapping out to play it, really. Right?
Right.
Here's the thing, you have Prophet.
There's a very small window to get rid of it. Much like Deadeye Navigator.
You are. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Any activation of Deadeye Navigator, there's a very small window to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that window is, I play Prophet of Crew Fix, go.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's same with Deadeye. Well, Deadeye is not go. One activation. When I
activate. Yeah, but right. Deadeye also costs six mana and another two and on another top two. Of that. Deadeye, I mean,
so it's an eight mana effect.
It's an eight mana effect, and if you play it without having the ability to flicker it, then you're not doing it right.
Right.
Yeah. You know? But like with Prophet, like I think just the downside of like, let's say you have five cards in your hand in Prophet, or you have four cards in your hand in Prophet.
Listen, you're explaining why it's powerful. I understand. No, it's very powerful. Is that I'm just saying how much more powerful than Deadeye and Contrarian Sphinx is it? Is it 100 times more powerful?
No, it's significantly more powerful.
Is it twice as powerful?
Yes.
Yes. It's twice as more powerful than Deadeye Navigator. I don't have a ton of experience with Consecrated Sphinx. It's just a
you shouldn't
serious
play that card.
Draw engine. but it's the same thing. You tap out to play Consecrated Sphinx. Well, it's got to survive for three or four turns, right?
I think Prophet's like 50% more powerful than those two cards. It's very powerful. Those other two cards could be banned, and a lot of people would be happy about it.
Like if those guys are on the threshold of being
I'm
banned.
I'm just saying, like, there we are.
Then there's Prophet 50%.
There's
higher,
always going to be something that's up there.
Yeah, but in
now
this
we've
case,
got Deadeye that's up
there.
I
think it's got too many strikes against it.
Yeah, see,
and so it's like, well, listen, we can't just ignore all these.
Deadeye requires cards to make it good. Prophet is good by itself.
Prophet literally requires cards.
No, but here's what I'm saying. Prophet at its worst, if you have zero cards in your hand and you have a Prophet of Crucifix, sure,
good.
It sucks. But at its best, it is so much better than those other cards.
Much.
No, because at its best, Consecrated Sphinx is just as good. Because at its best, it requires you to have a lot of mana.
No, you could build a deck around having activated abilities and then untap all of those every turn. Right? You can Fate Stitcher every turn.
That's but with Consecrated Sphinx, you can have a ton of mana and a ton of cards.
Yeah, but here's the thing is, again, you can play the Prophet of Crucifix on turn 5 and have an immediate and very powerful effect in one turn rotation, whereas if you play Consecrated Sphinx on turn 6 and you go around one table, sure, you've drawn a lot of cards.
Okay,
but
so not at its best.
No.
I'm countering your at its best argument.
All right, but I think, again, at its best here, let's say by turn 6.
Just saying Prophet of Crucifix doesn't require other things is wrong. It does.
It does.
It requires cards.
I'm not saying it doesn't require other things. I'm saying that it's just way better than the other ones, even if you have, like, let's say if you have a Concentrated Sphinx and a bunch of mana, you still can't play your permanents that are not instant speed on someone else's turn.
Okay, so Kiki Jiki, or, like I said, Dead and Ever, or Palancron, or there's a Niv-Mizzet. There's a whole bunch of cards that require one other thing, and you just win.
True.
It's true.
So then how is Prophet of Crucifix so much better of that?
Well,
because if you require something else...
The game doesn't warp around Kiki Jiki the way it does around
It totally Prophet. Warps around Kiki Jiki.
I don't think it does.
You never
it might become about killing Kiki Jiki before the player can do something, but it's not about, I'm in my blue-black reanimator deck. I need to reanimate Kiki Jiki right away. No, you reanimate Prophet of Crucifix every time over Kiki Jiki, for sure.
Well,
every
single time. But Consecrated Sphinx is the same
because
thing.
Because it's
like,
that much more powerful,
right? No, it's because
it's
Kiki Jiki works with the cards in the deck that have Kiki Jiki in it.
Right.
Doesn't work in the cards in the deck
works
that doesn't have Kiki
Jiki.
In
any deck.
Not necessarily.
It gives
it's
you
not
four,
great
it
in
gives any team four turns. Like
Mizzix, Narset.
Oh, it's great
Mizzix
in Mizzix. Why is it
much
not good
more
in Mizzix?
Setup than...
It's good in Mizzix because of mana, but Mizzix doesn't give a crap about it.
Yeah.
He's already giving you all the mana that you need.
I know, but that's not saying it's not...
It's fine.
It's not fine.
It's fine.
Kiki Jiki's also not good in Mizzix, so there you go.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, there's another card that just wins. Niv-Mizzet just wins. How is it? Prophet is very good, but in those decks, Kiki Jiki could be more powerful than Prophet in a deck built to take advantage of Kiki Jiki.
For sure. I think you're right about that.
And then you're talking about a deck built to take advantage of Prophet of Crucifix. How's that different?
And
Kiki's a legendary.
But
you can guaranteed have him.
Yeah.
Any deck can use a Prophet of Crucifix.
So let's
any
take
deck at all.
Let's take away the best case scenario and just think. If you're playing a red deck, do you automatically play Kiki Jiki?
No.
If you're playing a blue-green deck, do you automatically play Prophet of Crucifix?
Even before the commander.
So I think that's part of the reason why it's
if you're
again,
playing
it's
a deck, do
up.
You play Sol Ring?
Yes. But that
do you play Mana Crypt? Do you play Sensei's Diving Top?
Mana Crypt's
if we're banning all that stuff, let's ban it, but we're not.
I think that's an unfair comparison, though. Sol Ring and Prophet of Crucifix.
Why?
The game doesn't warp around Sol Ring.
Right. Turn one Sol Ring is like...
But the game doesn't
warp around
it. It's
powerful, but
it
doesn't
again.
Win you the game in the way that Prophet can just win
I would
you the
love
game.
To see statistics. I bet turn one Sol Ring wins are like 10% better win percentage than anything else.
Yeah, if you can sure. That's probably true.
I think at cast, Prophet of Crucifix probably gives you... Not that.
But the rest of the game for a long time until it's exiled or something becomes about
right,
getting
but a lot of times it's just killed.
Yeah, but the game doesn't become about ending that Sol Ring's chant, like chance
it
of life.
It doesn't, but it probably should. My guess is that a turn one Sol Ring, and it's got to be turn one or two, actually is enough accrued advantage that you wouldn't look at the game at the end of the game and be like, they won because of that soul ring, because it it's a weird way that it wins you the game, but I bet you it does.
Well, here's if the game goes beyond 7 or 8 turns.
I bet top's the same
but
way.
But here's the thing. No, here's the fundamental difference. Every deck can play those cards. Not every deck can play the profit. I think the ability to play blue-green was just you were just having a better deck in general.
Absolutely.
If you're able to
but
fetch
Jimmy,
out
we played a lot of games.
Those
Did
are also
you
the
feel
best
like
colors
blue-green decks already. Were like so much more powerful than
no,
other decks?
No, but every time a profit was played and no one had anything to do, I knew I wasn't winning that game.
Yeah, a profit without an answer is unstoppable.
But Kiki Jiki without an answer is unstoppable.
Kiki Jiki is not a card that every deck can play, and you have to build your deck to win with Kiki Jiki to be unstoppable.
Right. But
you
like
don't
I said,
need to have the... I'm taking away the best case scenario.
Take the average case scenario, and I think it's just very obvious that Profit Crucifix is better than
Kiki Jiki. I think it is. I'm just saying, like, the average case scenario for Profit's not that great either. It's you have to be... You have to be. I mean, it's good.
Basically,
I think the average case scenario of Profit is way better than the average case scenario for a lot of these cards.
Yep. Put one counterspell in your hand and, like, get out. It's over.
I think the average case scenario for Prophet of Crucifix is... Because I had many times where I played Prophet, had two creatures and had no card draw. Yeah. It's like, many times that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the lower case scenario.
I think that's average.
Lower case.
That's average.
It's not...
Because you're... Like you said, every deck is playing it. So we were not talking about a deck that's built to take advantage of it, because that's not every deck. We're
yeah,
not
but every deck should have card draw,
we're not talking about
Tim
deck. We're not talking about... Flicker deck, because those are like made to Flicker if you've got Rune or something that you have to activate. We're not talking about that, because those are built to take advantage of it. We're just talking about average blue-green deck. It's fine. You have to have a lot of creatures, and you have to have a lot of card draw. And it's very, very good. I'm not saying it's not very, very good. I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of cards that are very, very good.
In an average blue-green deck, after you cast Prophet, you are able to then empty your hand on the subsequent turns.
And I will say this, though, like, think about what a blue-green deck does. It's those two things.
Well, blue doesn't.
Blue draws cards and green has creatures, right? Like, I mean...
Green has ramp and blue draws cards. They're the two most important things in Commander.
And I think it's just a perfect storm. It's like you can't really point to one exact thing exactly, but when you line them all up, they're just overwhelming. And I think that there were so many games where, I played my Prophet of Crucifix, I said go, and I got to have one extra turn.
And you're chuckling inside.
That's not broken. I didn't automatically win because of it. But there were also a lot of games where someone played it, we couldn't answer it for 3 or 4 turns, and then that's it. And then they won. Or the whole game, for the rest of the game, becomes about getting the Prophet of Crucifix. And like, now we're not even really playing Commander anymore. We're just like...
I think there's so many...
Trying to cast Animate Dead on it and everything that fall under that category.
But, okay...
Listen, I agree. I totally agree with you on that. But again, that's not the only thing, right?
To end the discussion, just one thought, and you guys can each answer.
Sure.
Prophet of Crucifix, when you played it, did you feel like, oh, I cannot lose? When you cast it. Not when you untapped with it or whatever. The moment you cast it, how did that feel? Did it feel like Insurrection?
Okay, I'll say that when I cast Prophet of Crucifix, I felt like I have a way better chance of winning this game now if this doesn't die.
But, I mean, there's a lot of cards that fall in that category.
Oh.
Consecrated Sphinx feels exactly like that to me. I'm just
asking.
It
doesn't feel like that way.
No, because what if I draw like 6 lands off of it? Great.
I feel like Consecrated Sphinx, I'm like, okay.
I go Consecrated Sphinx, sick card. I'm definitely have a great creature. I have a chance here. Prophet, I probably would feel better.
Oh,
I really think it's that much better.
I would play Prophet, and you make sure that everybody's tapped out. You play Prophet, and you're like, what are you going to do?
Feel like you can't lose.
I am already ahead of the game, and I'm in a dominant position at that point.
Our meta is pretty spiky, and if you gave me the choice of having Consecrated Sphinx or Prophet in my hand and able to play it on the right turn, I would probably choose Prophet.
Yeah, because then you can play Con Sphinx.
It's true.
Well, no, if you can only have one, Phil, don't cheat. I mean, I would choose Prophet. I would. But there are definitely times, I think, when Sphinx or Palancron or any of these cards I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I don't think Palancron needs to be.
Palancron just wins. It's just infinite mana. You win a lot of times. So
yeah, but you have to do something with that infinite mana.
Yeah, and exactly, you have to have cards in your hand that are creatures to play with Prophet of Crucifix. Man,
but that's such a broad thing.
I know it is. Yeah, it's more broad, but I can't count the amount of times I had Prophet of Crucifix and 2 creatures in hand, and I played it and was like, sweet, cast a creature on your turn and in your turn. Now I got no cards.
Probably shouldn't have cast it.
But if I've got those three cards and I'm not winning right now, like, what am I going to do?
Why would you
nothing?
Cast it then?
Just do nothing?
You wouldn't. You wouldn't.
When was the last time you only
had
three cards?
When I look
hand.
At the grip full of cards and say pass, even when they can't
oh,
do
yeah,
something, and I choose not to do that.
Well, I'm a very bad player of Commander, as we all know.
Yeah.
Well, that was a lively discussion. That was great.
Let's see. Anyway. It ended with.
Well, it's not like Josh is at a 1 out of 10. He's at a 4.
He's at a 4.
Listen. Exactly. I just am
slightly against.
I slightly am against. And most of that, I probably would be at a 5, except for I'm just against banning.
Yeah.
I would. Well, this is the next question. If you were on the rules committee, what would be your first major proposal? So I'll go mine first. I would look at the ban list and try and take things off it. That's the way I would go. I wouldn't be trying to ban more stuff. I'd be trying to get some things off the ban list, get it smaller, get it more consistent. It feels like there's stuff on there that's like less powerful than stuff that's not on there.
Yeah.
Especially the early things, a lot of it feels pretty arbitrary.
Yeah. Okay, so outside of profit, which we just had like an hour-long discussion about, what would be the first thing you'd want to take off it? Just off the top of your head. Like,
say Mox
what,
Pearl.
What makes you think
Coalition of Victory.
all the Moxes.
Yeah. Well, obviously, yeah.
I think I would probably the Sylvan Primordial or...
That's probably what I would do, too.
I could see Sylvan
going. We played with Sylvan a lot, and it wasn't that bad.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Exactly,
but
yeah.
I just named a whole bunch of cards. I'm not going to do it again. Yeah, there's a lot of powerful
same
cards.
Discussion, exactly.
Yes, exactly. I just think that's the first one that comes to mind. There's a number of cards on there that I think are fine. And people are going to think that I'm saying they're not strong. They're very strong.
Of course,
but
yeah.
There's so many very
okay
strong cards. It just seems... A lot of them seem arbitrary. They just seem like, I don't know why this is on there, and these other five cards that could be on there aren't.
Right.
I think you can take Trade Secrets off, because if you have two Consecrated Sphinxes on the battlefield, it's essentially the same thing.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of cards on there that I would take a hard look at. I don't know specifically, but my goal to the Rules Committee would be like, we need to get five cards off this ban list.
Yeah.
Let's take a hard look and get five of them off there. Let's try and get this ban list down, because our format is about doing huge broken things. That's the thing I would say, not to get back in the profit thing, is just that it does do what the format wants to do. The downside is it takes forever, so I'm with it.
Yeah. Embercool, take them off. Let's have them in the format.
Grizzlebrand, let's go, baby.
I think the issue with Embercool,
we just want to play with
is,
these cards.
It's legendary, right?
You know what? You can house rule them back in.
Oh, so we can have him as a commander.
You could just guaranteed when it's going to happen. So
I may never own one, but I'd like to have Leverage.
That's why the band is
Alexandria
commander list was good. I'll go next because I have one right off the top of my head also. I would, initiate the bringing in of the Nephilim as legendary creatures and as officially allowed to be commanders.
Ah. Mm.
Four color commanders, and they are good commanders. They have cool abilities that are the kind
They're
of
crazy.
Stuff you see in commanders. Mark Rosewater himself has said he regrets not making them legendary. So let's say that there is now a rule officially in Commander where the Nephilim are allowed to be commanders.
Mm-hmm. And immediately you guys wouldn't be able to talk about them on your show because they would be $40 each.
That's true. But now, guess what they are right now? All around a dollar. Yeah. So pick up your Nephilims, everyone.
Yeah, let's get ready. Andy's
speculators.
Evil
speculators.
Yeah.
Move in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
that's what I would do, man. Because we don't have them, so let's just, the cards are there. Why not just add them in and have a blast with them?
Everybody knows I want four-color commanders.
You do. And so do I, man.
Would
be great.
It be aesthetically, like, a little bit annoying?
Yeah,
though?
I totally think that. Like, it's kind of like, they're not legendary, though. Which is how everyone feels now.
Yeah.
Tons of people house rule it and they allow them, but, like, officially they're not. Because
it's just, you look over. I've played against them many times at LGSs and TPs and stuff, and I'm always like, yeah, fine, play it, because I don't care. You can play a band commander for all I care.
Yeah.
But you always look over and you're just like, it just looks kind of ugly.
Yeah,
and that part of it's just, a teeny annoyance. Yeah.
Maybe they could like errata the cards to be legendary. Cause they're not,
and actually reprint them and they say legendary.
Cause they're not played in any competitive format.
But the rules committee doesn't get to print cards, bro.
That's true.
Yeah. Sorry. You only get to Oracle.
You're right. Star. We got to switch that up. Yeah.
What if I took a pen and I wrote legendary?
Legendary. I would petition Wizards to do that.
All right.
I think it'd be a fun move.
Now, one quick aside. How do you pronounce that? Nephilim.
Yeah, Nephilim. Well, I played enough Diablo to know it's pronounced
Nephilim.
Nephilim sounds about right to me.
Heffalumps and Woozles.
Heffalump.
Heffalump.
Heffalumps. Yeah. Four color Heffalump, please.
I'm playing four color Heffalump.
Yeah. It's Feldegriff minus the color, I guess. Yeah. Phil, okay. What would you do?
I have three proposals.
Whoa.
No, yeah. What?
No.
He gets onto the rules committee and he's just going to change the whole format. Look at this guy.
The first thing I would do, and I have to thank Nate, my co-host for this, is I would propose a toast because. Because I made it.
All right. Okay.
I propose
acceptable.
To me.
I propose
acceptable.
A toast.
That's your first major
proposal.
Congratulations,
rules committee.
Acceptable. All right. What was your second major proposal?
The second major proposal I have, I would look at the infect rule. And I would scale the infect. I'd recommend scaling the infect points needed to lose the game to something that's higher.
What? How much?
I would probably say something between 15 and 20. I would want to play test it. Maybe collect a little
17.
Bit of data.
17.5 it is,
17.5.
I would go 15.
Our friend.
Yeah, I would
well,
allow
our
15.
Friend. Your friend.
Craig.
Friend
Craig right
show.
Now
Craig
is screaming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Pulling his hair out. Yeah. Yeah. I actually recently built an infect deck, and I found myself agreeing with Craig, actually. It's quite hard to win with an infect deck.
Oh, it is, yeah.
It's very hard to win. It's very easy to kill one player.
Exactly.
Though.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Just
yeah.
to ice someone out of the game.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
that's
very
certainly
easy to knock somebody out on turn five, yeah. but it's hard to actually knock the other two players.
But the same thing is true for some Voltron commanders, right? It's easy to kill one guy, but then once everyone's had their chance to get their answers,
yeah.
then
true.
That Voltron player
true.
Is kind of screwed. Yeah.
Usually,
well.
Though, your Rafiq is bigger than a 1-1.
Rafiq is a special case.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, he is. He's boy. All right. Boy.
Is your third proposal marriage to me? No.
Yes. Josh.
Whoa.
Oh, wow. This got super weird really fast.
I realize that neither of us really finds the other attractive.
The marriage of convenience sounds like commander to me.
Yeah, exactly. If anyone should be marrying one of you Americans, it's me.
It's
I got to live here, you guys. I'm an actor, for Christ's sake.
No, we want to move to Canada, not the other
yeah,
way around.
Yeah, we are
what?
Moving
Let's
to Canada.
Swap.
Things are not looking too hot politically.
A.
Come on.
No.
You can say A whenever you want.
No, we're not allowed
but
to
you
say
can't
that
get
here.
That free health care. No. Boy.
All right, proposal number three. Sorry, Phil.
Proposal number three. This is where I would, my personal bias against infinite combos comes into play. Mm. And that's where I believe that we should not be allowed to play infinite combos more than five times a wheel of the table.
Five now, times per wheel of the table, you mean?
Per wheel of the table.
So any action you take that's repetitive, you can do it five times total until your next turn?
Right. And if you play any automatic infinite combos like Sanguine Bond and Exquisite Blood, you lose the game.
The cards turn against you,
yeah,
and
somehow,
they stab you
yeah.
in the back, and
well,
you lose the game.
And this is in part because in a world where there are a lot of tutors, in particular for these infinite combos, and we can all name dozen, like we can all name yeah. together mm-hmm. easily a dozen without having to stretch. It does not reflect any skill at all. To be, my New Yorker comes out to be able to tutor for Exquisite Blood. What did I just prove? Oh, I can spend two mana, tutor for Exquisite Blood, get it, put it into play, and guess what? Everybody loses except me, right?
But does putting Eldrazi Conscription on Rafiq and swinging take any skill?
No, it doesn't.
So how is that different?
Because you don't instantly win the game.
Sure, you don't instantly win that way.
Oh, okay, and swinging right. at the person that doesn't have any creatures?
Yeah, well, that's...
You swing three times and you're good.
You only got to swing once, man. You got
double
strike.
You only swing once, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's plus 10, plus 10, double strike.
Yeah, that's true.
You just win when you do that.
But also, you've added now you've added the, oh, well, now this guy's
I just, the no squill quotient. I'm just, so basically ban infinite combos.
Yeah, and it turns out it makes it a much more fun play experience. If you don't have to worry about somebody dropping Exquisite Blood, I'm using that as the poster child, right? Then all of a sudden the game becomes a lot more flexible, a lot more, you can take more risks, you can have more fun playing Magic, right?
But is less risk more fun? Maybe for you, but I like to jump out of airplanes.
Well, it's the same reason the Tuck rule was changed, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to risk your commander going away, and if your commander goes away, that's no fun, right? It's essentially the same thing. By reducing the number of times you can bring an infinite combo into play or a combo into play, you're allowing everybody at the table to have more fun. You are, in a way, having you have to build a more solid deck because otherwise you just load up with tutors and boom, 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 you get it all done.
Yeah. This is a meta thing again.
Right? It is.
Like, totally. If you have that guy in your meta or those people in your meta that are doing that,
who
it's like, well, this
those
people. Yeah, exactly. Those yeah. But I'll say this, though. We were playing a game a couple weeks ago, and any one of us would have killed for any one of us to get an infinite combo to end that game. Right?
That's actually why a lot of us build it in, is because our decks will just sit there and just slowly combat and get into stalls until someone's just like, someone, yeah. wins, and I, someone won the game.
Please. Yeah, and I can realize that not everyone has the discipline or, I don't know, the compassion that like we do, where sometimes I'll have my infinite combo and just be like, well, no, I'm not going to play it right now because this is a fun interactive game and it's, you know, it's still pretty early and I think I can do this other cool thing instead. Right. Some people will just be like, well, I win, game over. Let's play again. And that's fine. Actually, I think generally that's fine. If it's happening a lot and it gets annoying, I can see that getting annoying. But again, I think that's a meta problem.
Yeah. And this may come from my being in an older meta where most of the players comboed out by turn six.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes the combos were not fast.
Right.
And so that was murderous. You just sit there and watch them do these gymnastics and then win the game because like you stopped playing Magic though. About 20 minutes ago.
Right. And, you know, this is, it seems to me just kind of...
Yeah,
it's just a part of Magic, though. It's kind of built into the game. Storm is a thing that affects all aspects of Magic, kind of, right? Like,
so was Tuck.
So was Tuck. Yeah, I don't know. I never had a problem with it. But then again, I come from a meta where it's not a problem.
Right.
So I only have my own experiences to color my opinions.
Here's to being on the rules committee.
Here's to being the new rules committee.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
Toast.
This is definitely like a pretty hot button issue because we hear about it a lot from people, and it's a frustrating thing. I think people fall on both sides of the fence pretty evenly as far as like a lot of people really hate infinite combos.
Yeah.
A lot of people are fine with it. It's interesting to ban it. You know, I've always thought the idea of setting a cap on the amount of times you could repeat something was a good idea in theory. It's just in practice.
In practice, it's hard.
It's
to start like marking it down.
Yeah, it's tough. And some infinite combos aren't... There's combos in the game that you could repeat something five times, but it's not infinite.
Yeah.
So what do we do in that instance?
Well, there are actually two types, right? The voluntary infinite and the actual infinite, where you can't control it.
Right, yes.
There's other types too, though. There's ones where it might be infinite, it might not.
Mm-hmm.
It depends sort of what's on the top, what's my top of my deck. Like Narset can sort of... That's not infinite, but I could take seven turns in a row. Is that fine?
Yeah. I also have another question. Like, how would you... So I have a Caridor deck, and I'm sure lots of people have this same thing, where it's like a Revelark and a Safi Eric's Daughter and a Sun Titan and a Karmic Guide. And, like, that's, like, five cards, and it's, like, sometimes it's the Revelark that's doing it, but sometimes it's the Sun Titan. And some, you know what I mean? Like, I can switch that back enough times that, like... I'm just going to win anyways probably with it.
Yeah, it's not infinite, right?
Yeah,
Safi's
yeah.
doing it first time, then it's Revelark, exactly. Then it's Karmic Guide, then I'm doing, you know, I can do each of those five times, that's 20 times.
And that's going to be harder to do given it's five or six cards or whatever, so that's maybe everyone's just going to be fine with that, but I was thinking like maybe it's just limited to two card combos, right?
Yeah, that is a way to limit it.
Yeah.
When I built League rules about a year and a half ago, it revolved around the two card combo. Right, and I was very judgmental, and I called them degenerate combos because, you know, it's really like, oh, I got this card, I win. Right. Oh, look at me, I'm a great Magic player, right?
Yeah. I love how you're hating on people who, you're basically calling everyone who uses two card combos or something like they have no temp, they have no talent,
go on.
They have no play skill,
go on.
They have no, come on, man.
I'm like, not disagreeing with any of this.
Did I mention judgmental?
Yeah, jeez.
Yeah.
Jeez. No, but I'm just using Exquisite Blood and Sanguine Bond as the poster child for that. But I've done it too. Earthcraft and Squirrel Nest.
Right.
Right?
That's not actually...
Kiki Jiki.
You need a Haste Enabler or Earthcraft and Squirrel Nest.
Kiki Jiki
and
Zealous Conscript.
Okay, that's one.
Sure. Right.
Goblin Bombardment.
Right. And there are ways
that's
to do
a third
it.
Card. Yeah. It's totally different.
Yeah.
It's not as...
Zealous Conference... No, Kiki makes Haste... Tokens of haste, so you don't need.
Like, I don't think Kiki Jiki Splinter Twin or whatever it or whatever
Zealous Conscript
or anything else.
Pestermite,
yeah, any of those. It counts in my definition of the two card combo because you can go off and make a million creatures if you want, but then you still have to swing and attack.
Well, Kiki makes tokens that have haste.
I know, right. But they still have to attack. Like I bring up my Arachnogenesis,
right? If I have Ghostly Prison.
Right, so I think the attacking for me separates it a little bit, at least. Right,
like, so it's different than Sanguine Bond because that doesn't require another thing that actually does the damage on the card.
Exactly. Yeah.
So then you have, like Jimmy said, a Goblin Bombardment out.
But that's a third card.
No, that's three cards you're talking about.
Well, I'm not talking about just the two card.
Yeah.
I mean, that two cards are the poster child, but those infinite combos. And like, and to be honest, the other day when we all played, I had one with Marith, right? And I walked through how to make it work with Marith, and it was like, okay, game's over. But we were also at the limit. We were kind of tired. We wanted to play other games. You wanted to draft Jimmy, right? And so it seemed like it was okay. Plus, I was willing to do it only five times if anybody raised a stink. But everybody's like, oh, all right, that's great. Boom, next game.
Yeah.
And so,
see, that to me is like, yeah, I'm totally fine.
Yeah,
there was no animosity. We were like, yep,
that's
yep,
exactly. There you go. Awesome.
Sweet. Yeah. Sweet. And that no was skill involved.
and so for me, that infinite combo, I just looked around the table. No one was upset at it. And it seemed like we wanted to end. And it was the end of a very long day for some of us. And so it was okay. But my next question was, is it okay? Because if it's not, then I won't do it. I'll only do it five times.
Yeah. I mean, my issue with the five times thing is like, you're going to run into just the same issue you guys had with doing the partial Paris thing wrong.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't feel like that rule filters down to most players. And then so all of a sudden, they don't even know. Like, it's just really counterintuitive. It's not intuitive to how the game works.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know it requires a level of abstraction of understanding the rules and being able to roll with it all the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why kind of simply my proposal would be no infinite combos, however many cards it takes, or only five times if it's a voluntary infinite combo, no matter how many cards it takes to do that. Basically, that loop, you run that loop five times.
All right.
Tough to police.
Yeah, it's controversial.
Yep.
If I was on the rules committee,
yes,
my
us.
First major proposal would be outside of, hey, contact Wizard, see if you guys can work together in a more official capacity because you need info.
It wouldn't be you guys. It'd include you. You'd be on the rules
committee.
Right. Hey, scenario,
yeah. I'm going to.
Oh, my gosh. I could talk to so many people. I know all these people at Wizards I could talk to right now. The first thing I think I would propose would be more, I would want to start an initiative to start looking into alternate quote unquote forms of Commander. I know a lot of people got really interested in Tiny Leaders when it came out, but it just wasn't a very well developed format and it got solved very quickly and sort of just didn't have the proper supervision and sort of fathering, mentoring, mothering ability to sort of sit there and make it feel good.
Are you saying it needed adults?
It needed some adults.
Maybe some large leaders with the tiny ones.
Yeah.
I would love to see EDH expand out and say, you know, like, hey, we have this new mini format within EDH called Nephilims. Can we play as your commander? Or, you know, like just doing stuff and experimenting with the format because there's nothing wrong with doing that. It's the same way that R&D experiments with different designs of cards and Wizards make Standard and Modern and all these other kinds of sort of playable, constructible formats. So I think it'd be fun to hopefully just start walking down that path. Who knows where it leads, but I feel like it can only be good things, especially as the game grows.
There are a lot of other ones. I mean, are you talking about like something like Canadian Highlander, for example?
Yeah, but it's not under the rules committee. So it's got their own separate thing. And sort of willy-nilly, people are just going out and doing stuff, and that's great. And I think that what that does show is that there is a desire for it.
Right.
So it'd be awesome to have more people working on it.
Right on.
Yeah, that's great.
Or like rules? Do you also mean like rules for stuff like secret partners and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean like that. Totally. There you go. That's a perfect place to start and sort of maybe a issue. Like here's our official V1 of how to play secret partners in EDH.
That would be wicked.
That'd be great.
I mean, I could just refer back to your guys' podcast for that because it was a solid one. And I don't know. We've been playing secret partners and it's the best.
It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really
so
good.
So good.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm really surprised nobody brought up hybrid mana.
I talked about it, and it's like, and everyone I've ever talked to is like, no, it's fine. Leave it the way it is.
It and I feel that same way.
Yeah.
But it's one of those issues that I feel like is pretty evenly split out there.
Yeah, maybe a lot of people.
There's at least there's a large section of people that want to make it so that the hybrid mana symbol can be used in either color, and you don't have to be in both color. Maybe it's not the majority or even evenly split, but it feels like it's a lot. So I'm just surprised nobody brought that up. I wouldn't either. I'm just saying.
It's funny. It's also one of the indicators, one of the greatest indicators of a rift between the RC and Wizards.
Yes.
Because if you bring it up and, you know, Mark Rosewater is very clear about how he thinks it should be okay because it's part of either color identity.
Mm-hmm.
And Sheldon is very, very strict about, no, this doesn't fit.
Yeah. A red commander that's only red doesn't know anything about this card that has blue.
Even if it's red amber.
Even if it's red
or blue.
Yeah, whatever, right?
So. You should be playing Mizzix anyway.
I feel like the card pool is so large that, like, what's the big deal? We're going to increase it by, like, what, 40 cards maybe?
Yeah.
You know, 50 cards for any given deck. Like, it just feels like, I mean, come on. Like, the card pool is 20,000 cards.
The reason, the best reason I can think of for, like, keeping it the way it is because there are cards out there that, you know, it's a green-black color identity. It's a green-black ability, and I shouldn't be able to put it in just one of those colors or even in a deck like a red-blue-green deck. Now it has some black in it, and it has a black ability in it, and like that's not what you're not supposed to be able to do that, right? Mm. Like, I don't know. I can't even
it
think
is
of
sort it. Of aesthetically on the same level of the Nephilim thing.
Sort of,
a
yeah.
little bit displeasing, I would say.
Yeah.
Maybe that's not a major reason to keep it. I don't know. I just don't feel very strongly about needing it.
No, I mean,
so it's just like, yeah, but it is interesting.
Yep.
All right. Well, that is going to do it, guys, for a 2-hour podcast.
Wow. We solved everything.
Yes. We solved everything. But, you know, it's true. This is the summit. Maybe we'll have this happen once a year. And there's a lot of stuff that we had to talk about and a lot of differing opinions, which is great. It is nice. Thank you for coming on the show, guys,
for
one.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
You play in completely different play groups, which is very nice because we...
Although we've played a few times with both of you now.
Yeah. Let's move on to the listeners. Let's ask you guys out there, please let us know what you think of the state of the format. What are your biggest issues facing EDH? Do you agree/disagree with some of us? Do you think,
you have
Josh,
totally different things that we didn't even talk about? Because I'm sure there are issues that we didn't think of or we don't even...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and we'd love to hear about that.
Yep. Yeah, so enlighten us and help us help you guys.
Help me help you. Help me help you.
Is that from Naked Gun?
No, Jerry Maguire.
Okay.
Let me help me.
Wait, no, wait.
On by a
hang
very
on.
Thin thread.
Help me help
you. I dig that about you.
Help me help you.
And then Cuba's making fun of him later, and he's like, oh, you're help me help you.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha. All right.
Yeah, yeah.
We're good at movie stuff.
Jimmy,
I wonder why.
You complete me.
Oh, my.
On the Command Zone podcast.
Phil proposed
to
me earlier.
Oh, yeah, that's
so.
Right.
Josh, I can't quit you.
You know what's a Jerry Maguire moment I always think of?
Show me the money?
No. It's way smaller. Sometimes I'll get out of the shower and like I won't be able to find my towel. Here. And I'll go, that's okay, I air dry. I just think that to myself all the time. It's the weirdest moment to always think of.
Cuba Gooding Jr. is so good in that movie. Great.
And he's killing it in this OJ thing, which is my clean note. That's not
actually, no, that is
it's
our
time for
final
the end step.
Moment.
It's not
the
my
end
step. No way.
Come on. OJ, that,
the People
that
versus OJ?
Sweet. Yeah, dude. John Travolta, David Schwimmer saying juice.
Schwimmer is killing it,
dude,
man.
Dude, Schwimmer and saying juice all the time. That's how he refers to OJ Simpson.
I'm confused. Is it actually good or is it not good? Because
it's both.
It's good.
It's both.
It's good.
It's not good, it's but good. It's also therefore good.
Yeah. Oh, so it's so not good that it's actually good?
No.
Not even really. It's
like
weird.
A 7.
Oh, it's I'm not so strictly
wow.
bad.
Me too.
Phil.
Therefore good. It's like, it's kind
of... When should we set the wedding?
Let's go see this movie.
Send up Save the
No,
date.
It's a TV show. It's a series.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's great. John Travolta, Cuba Gooding Jr., David Schwimmer. Oh man. Nathan Lane.
I'm going to tell a quick OJ Simpson story.
Did I say
story?
David Schwimmer's in there?
I lived in Oregon at the time, but I happened to be in L.A. I was, I think, like 12 or 13, maybe 14. Mm-hmm. And I got caught in the O.J. traffic. I just happened to be passing through.
The Bronco traffic?
Yes.
It's
just a pure coincidence. I just happened to be with a group that was passing through L.A. on that day. And we got caught on the 5 freeway for 9 hours. It was just dead stop. We literally were out of the van throwing the football in the middle of the freeway. For like 4 hours.
Man, wish
there was
you had some magic cards, huh?
9 hours might be a slight... Yeah, I wish I did. Might be a slight exaggeration. Wow. But yeah, and it turned out... We didn't know at the time what the heck was going on. Turned out that was the traffic from the OJ Bronco.
Wow.
That's neat. I've never ever met anyone who was like... Had anything to do with that at all.
I mean, I didn't live in LA. It's just pure coincidence. I was just happened to be there at that day.
Lucky you.
Yeah, super lucky.
Wow, that is ridiculous. So that is the end step for... Good old Andy here. It's a TV show called The People versus OJ.
My real one is actually the show, the Stephen King movie series that's on Hulu right now with Franco in it.
Yeah. Oh,
what's it called?
Okay.
Like, it's the time travel
it's
one.
It's the date
or...
one. It's like 11-12-63 or whatever. The
you
day
don't
that
even know
Kennedy
the
died.
Name
I don't know.
Because
it's a bunch of numbers. I don't know.
James Franco.
You Americans should know. When was Kennedy shot?
1963.
Which it's 11/22/63.
I was right, 63. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. I'm really digging it. I'm a big Stephen King fan. I haven't read this book, but I got told a lot to read it, and I actually just found out coming here to LA that the Hulu has a show. And I've been
now you don't have to read the book.
It's from J.J. Abrams and, you know, Stephen King, and James Franco plays the lead character, and it's actually very good so far, I gotta say.
Cool. It's got 9 out of 10 on IMDb, so that's pretty good.
Wow.
It's neat. Oh, and Josh Duhamel.
Duhamel.
Duhamel? Duhamel?
Duhamel.
We're the worst at pronouncing things.
Is that Mr. Furry?
Oh, my God.
I,
in G.I. Joe, I think.
Oh, I ran into Josh Duhamel once on the Universal lot, and literally ran into him. The elevator opened, and he was like looking at his phone and just walked right into me.
Wow.
Yeah. And then he said...
And then 9 hours later,
I'm parked on
the
first floor. What's the first floor? And I was like, this is the first floor.
The one with number one in it, man.
Yeah. And he was like, how do I get to my car? Because the first floor at that place, you couldn't actually get to the parking garage. So I was like, oh, you have to go outside and go around. And so I was like, this is the first floor. It's the one.
My driver hasn't told me where my car is.
He was astonishingly good looking, though, I got to say.
Mm, wow.
Yeah.
Mm, cool.
He is a very handsome man.
Is he invited to the wedding?
Yeah. Tall,
I was going to say.
Tall,
yeah, you can
I don't know if Phil wants him at the wedding.
To get jealous.
He may have also not found his car yet. We'll see.
The best proposal ever.
He might.
He was
be
on
looking.
That show looking for a car. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah. Phil, do you have something cool outside the world of Magic for our end step?
Why, yes, I do. Although it's sort of actually inside the world. I have, as always, three things.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. So first, L is in Japan, right? Or is it L?
L.
L is in Japan.
Oh, right? Yes, my girlfriend's in Japan, right. And Phil knows a lot about Japan because
he was just
Phil
ahead.
Does.
I'll
just
let there. You do it.
Yeah.
Dude, Phil, just there.
Yeah,
so
I'm jealous.
I'm gonna recommend all of the magic stores I went to. I'm gonna tell. I have this email started. I'm sorry,
awesome.
I haven't sent it
yet.
I'm but it's like all the places to go and what each one offers as a specialty. So
wow, that is
you'll get the good hookup there.
Yeah, because of course Elle's going to Japan, and I'm like, hold on, I gotta text Phil and find out where you need to go to buy my magic cards.
And she was like, of course.
Yep. She didn't even. But, she didn't even hesitate. She's like, yeah, okay. That's true love.
That is
true
love.
True
yeah.
love.
Yeah, that's and great.
I'm going to recommend places to eat as well.
Yeah, tonkatsu. Yes.
Tonkatsu.
Dude, oh, my favorite. I have to send you my favorite tonkatsu place. I went to one.
Which one?
Send it to me.
I forget. It was in this crazy mall that had like this huge... It wasn't in Tokyo. It was in Osaka? No, I don't know. I'll figure it out. Either way, it was a huge, awesome train station that went up all these floors, and it was like on the 14th floor, this row of restaurants,
there's
tonkatsu place.
There's nothing quite like... Perfect tonkatsu. It's one of the best things on earth.
It's a rare delight.
Yeah, I'll recommend. There are two Sweet. Places in Tokyo that she can go to that are just highly recommended. They're wonderful. I have
I remember your pictures of it on Twitter.
Yes, okay. That's right. If you want, I'll
so
repost
jealous.
Those pictures.
What's tonkatsu? Is that
breaded
chicken?
Yeah.
No, pork
or chicken.
Yeah,
pork. But katsu typically
chicken
pork.
Is okay. called.
Do you like pork belly?
Do you guys see the look on my face right
now?
Yeah.
Dude,
this is a thing.
Perfectly...
No, I actually kind of knew it because the sushi place.
It's like
it all
perfectly fried
pork and with delicious
it's,
dipping
it's schnitzel.
Sauce.
This is golden fried.
It's not it's, schnitzel.
It's kind of like schnitzel.
It's pork belly. The Japanese feed their pigs certain food, and then that turns
sake.
Into types of tonkatsu.
Oh,
and so
oh,
you
wow.
can recommend regional differences and all.
They have different cuts,
word.
Like the thick cuts and the thin cuts, and the and then you have to like smash your own sesame seeds and the.
It's so good.
I'm getting hungry.
Sounds neat.
I hope everyone else is too.
Smashed sesame.
We're only
pork,
on number two though.
Fries. This is one.
This is one. Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
This
okay.
can't be one.
We got to move on.
We
number
had,
two.
We
number
two
on
our
podcast here.
Number two, Josh, your pictures, your movies about from your taken. Sorry, Josh. Your movie is taken from your new drone. Fantastic. They are so beautiful. They're wonderfully shot. And you're able to do
this
things
is
the,
his,
with
the effect. His wedding vows speech.
Yeah wow.
This isn't recommending us anything outside the world of magic. Josh is inside the world
here's
of magic.
My recommendation. Just like Jimmy's brother has done, go build your own drone for $100 and then take
there you
sort
go.
Of beautiful pictures. But the other thing is, and... I realize, honey, that this sounds very very romantic, but you have an eye for what makes a good shot, and well. You're clearly editing it. You should maybe do something in a professional context that lets you work with videos.
Oh, does this recommend other jobs?
The end step? What is this? What are we doing right now?
Where one of you guys brings a job recommendation to the host.
I will talk about the drone on another end step, but it's awesome.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's like my new favorite thing ever.
It's pretty awesome.
Number three,
and this is where you'll see what I meant earlier in the show.
You know, we could have brought you back on the show again, but now you're going to...
Well, so what I've done is I've brought you...
Oh, here's the gift.
Gifts.
Oh, I like number three now. We're getting stuff.
This one is somewhat self-serving because...
Oh, I know what this is.
These playmats
have
probably
pictures
say
of Phil on them.
They do.
They're just a picture
is
of Phil.
Is it in your wedding gown?
It's actually, it's a picture of me and a picture of Josh, and we're surrounded by hearts.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He's untethering.
I'm unwrapping it, and of course, we all know what it is.
Oh, very
it's a
nice.
Commanderin MTG podcast playmat. It's for each of you, and of course, Sean.
Oh, he got one for Sean. He's going to love it.
That.
It's totally self-serving.
These are really
will
great.
You sign mine? I will get a pen if you can
oh, yes,
sign mine.
Oh, yes.
I have a Sharpie right here.
Actually,
Silver Sharpie.
Are you going to sign your own playmat?
Yeah, these are
both
yours.
Oh, no, I'll sign them. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're and, nice.
Oh, yeah. Everybody sign it.
I am,
yeah.
Actually.
Everyone
it's funny.
Signed.
So this is a dream for me, right? Just being with you guys and talking about it. Being on the Command Zone, talking to Andy. Now, twice in 2 weeks, right? We've had wonderful conversations.
Some people call that a nightmare. Moving on.
Oh, bit of a nightmare.
Wonderful. So I'm actually going to have you sign the show notes here because I'm that kind of a geek.
Oh, you are a geek.
And... So two more gifts?
Wait, what? There are more gifts?
I have more gifts.
Phil?
Yes.
Phil, you can come on the show anytime. Yeah.
Right?
It's not that exciting. You can come on whenever you want.
Anytime.
Wait a minute.
For
I saw 100. The gift.
All right. So this one.
Really hope this is going to Josh.
These are
again,
of a burn.
Again with this?
No, this time not for you, sir.
Okay, sweet.
These are KMC Perfect Fit. I know that you don't double sleeve in, even though I've given you, what, 2 packs, 3 packs?
I don't know.
And so for Jimmy.
Oh, my goodness.
For Andy.
You know, I was just running out of these.
Thank
as well.
You.
Hey, I have a couple of extra packs.
And he's got a couple of extra packs.
Perfect.
But then these are gifts.
Josh is giving you his iPad.
This is for our host. I'm giving you an iPad. Whoops,
ooh.
Don't look. And so this is one of the things that Elle will be able to provide you, except for the message on the back.
No. So, see, she doesn't. There's no way she could, like. Oh, so what he's given us, wow,
cool.
Are the foil large. Commander cards from Commander 2015. We Jimmy and I both got Mizzix in Japanese.
In Japanese.
How
yes.
Cool.
That's
cool.
Sick.
And there's a nice little message on the back.
Yeah. Jimmy, thanks for all the Commanderin. Smiley face, Phil.
Lovely.
Mine says the same thing, except for it says Josh. It doesn't say Jimmy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I should have put a heart on yours.
I'm
that.
Just Sorry. Amazed that there is a sleeve that fits these.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, my
I
friend,
like how it's side-loading the sleeve.
Yeah,
it's not top-loading.
My friend Butler keeps accidentally ordering these from... The,
oh,
one
because
of the,
he's like,
one
oh,
places.
I want to get a, I want to get this foil version of this.
Yeah,
oh,
and he doesn't
no,
check, and he's just
huge.
Like, oh, this one's cheap, wicked, and then he gets it.
Yeah. What do I do with these?
He's got like so many. I'm like, I didn't even know they made oversized cars for those ones. Like, he's got like commons and stuff. I don't know how he even got them.
Yep.
That's incredible. Awesome.
And I know we don't generally play with oversized, but
I'm totally putting this like. So,
you know what?
This will be my commander when I play Mizzix.
No joke. That same friend ordered a commander that's large, and he's like, well, I'm just gonna play with it then. And you know what? It's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, that's excellent.
I'm using
this.
Yeah. 100%. Cool. 100%. Although excellent. People groan whenever I pull out the Mizzix deck, so not that often.
Okay, well, listen, you guys are all being lovey-dovey and everything. And before you guys just start saying goodbye to everyone, because I know it might not be coming right away, I just wanted to say thank you guys, the three of you, so much from me and Sean, and just the Commander community in general. You guys have been so supportive.
Oh, absolutely.
And been so great in supporting our show. And we just can't thank you enough. You guys are the best, and you guys make the best shows. And honestly, like, you know, I don't want to be here all night.
Yeah.
I'm you know, loving off each other, but you guys are honestly the best and the greatest guys. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, thank you guys.
Absolutely.
We're fans of your show. We're fans of Commander. We think your guys' show makes Commander as a format better. So we're always going to support that. So
did you bring us gifts? However, are there any gifts?
Brought you the gift of the correct timing when to say A after stuff.
Brilliant.
Which you guys are way off on. Yeah. So I'm going to fix that for you.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
Speaking of other podcasts that are awesome, our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern with Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. You should definitely go check them out. They talk about modern and all things competitive magic. You can find them on Twitter at the MMcast, or you can find them on rocketjump.com/the MMcast.
Yes.
All right. I'm always looking at Jimmy. Jimmy, was I right? I was right.
You did it. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. Special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the Living Cards animations. You can find Jeffrey online at Living Cards MTG on Twitter, and you can find us on YouTube at youtube.com/TheCommandZonePodcast. But before we go, Andy Hullbone.
At Andy Hullbone. I also have another secret podcast. It's about that show, The Bachelor. It's called The Bachelor Pod. I'm not kidding.
Wow.
That's host, amazing.
I co-host two podcasts. That one's about gift. Magic. The other one's about
That is the
Bachelor.
Gift you have provided us
Write
tonight.
Down the Twitter so I can put it on the...
Okay, cool. Anyways, that's it.
Phil DeLuca.
Tell us about... All right, Chair.
You're not going to tell us about Commander's Brew?
Oh, yeah, and Commander's Brew, obviously. We already mentioned that. At Commander's Brew, at Andy Hullbone, at Sean Tabaris. Yeah, there you go.
Sean, I hope you were listening when you got second billing. Phil.
And so you can find me on Twitter at Ketjak. That's K-E-T-J-A-K. But of course, the podcast is at Commanderin MTG. It's not Commandering MTG, Commanderin MTG.
But if you go to CommanderingMTG.com, you'll be
redirected. Yep. Yeah.
And you should definitely go there and try and get a hold of one of these awesome playmats because it looks pretty sick.
Yep. Yeah, they're great.
Someday,
right now we're giving them out as prizes.
Someday we'll get a playmat. I don't know when. Probably like 2019 or so.
2019.
2021, maybe?
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Well, you have a great logo. You should do it.
Yeah, we're lazy. On that note, if you're still listening and I have no clue why you would be, but if you are, thank you for listening.
By the way, we didn't have an episode last week, so this counts as two because it's currently at 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Oh, my.
Wow.
And we could just keep going and make it 3, guys. You
yeah,
good fight?
Let's go.
Let's talk about the
problem. Let's
just
keep going, things. Man.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.